Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
And thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us on the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com, join our Twitter team, and also check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Check out the different pages, as well as the Give page, which has some wonderful organizations and conservative organizations there as well that need your support. So please check them out and support them. I thank you, and I'm sure they will appreciate it as well. And also, if you are a Facebook user, check us out on Facebook just by going to your search engine, and you can just put in Bard's Logic Political Talk, and you'll be able to find the Bard's Logic Political Talk page as well as the Bard's Logic Political Talk group as well. Tonight, we're going to have one of John Boehner's 2014 congressional challengers, Jim Conda Jr. We don't have him on the line yet, but we are waiting him to call in, so we should have him shortly. So join us in our roundtable discussion after we interview him. And so, also, check out the description with Jim Conda Jr. He's also done a lot of things where you can see on his website, Jim Condit for Congress or 7. But as we wait for him to come in, we do see that our contributor, Dan Gray, is on the line. So, well, I see our guest on. So I will open up his mic, and thank you very much, Dan. We see you out there. We will be bringing you in. But first, we will bring in our guest for the night. And that is Jim Conda Jr. Thank you very much, Jim, for calling to the show. How are you?
How are you doing? Thank you.
Good, good. It's great to have you on. And so we'll get right to it. You have ran in the past, so let's talk about briefly on your other runs, I believe, against John Boehner. So we'll start there.
Well, I first ran for public office in the 1970s, believe it or not, 1979, a city council, Cincinnati. And during that period, we stumbled into and then became lead exposers in the problem of computerized voting. And then I didn't run from the 80s until 2002, after 9/11, because I felt there was so much deception going on. I used the reasonable access law, which everybody should know about, which is the law that forces the FCC-licensed radio and TV stations like ABC, CBS, NBC, their affiliates, WLW, all the major AM and FM radio stations, forces them to play the ads of federal candidates. That would be congressmen, senators, and federal judges and president. U.S. senators, that is, and U.S. congressmen. But in 2010, I got the idea that it might be best to run against John Boehner, Speaker of the House, rather than one of the Republicans in Cincinnati. Now, people say, well, are you running to win, or are you just running to put radio ads on? Well, I'd be glad to run to win. But the deck is stacked so greatly against anyone who's coming up against the duopoly, the Republicans and Democrats, both in censorship that third party candidates face from the media, even when they have tremendous traction, like Ron Paul did. He was brutally censored in 2007, and they had to start covering him a little because of all the things he was doing. And even when they covered him in 2012. he was always treated as kind of like an amusing crank who was kind of an interesting guy, but not presidential timber, where some complete zero, like Barack Obama or George W. Bush, are treated as if, boy, they're really serious candidates, people that can't even talk on their feet for too long without some help. You know, where Ron Paul got up, and gave all of his speeches without notes, usually. Same with Howard Phillips, who founded the Constitution Party. Same with Pat Buchanan. Same with Ralph Nader, all people who are blocked out of. So you got the censorship problem. And then you have the computer vote fraud problem. And we can talk a little more about that. I got 36,000 votes, according to all the networks, in 2010 against John Boehner. I came in second. He was, we had 140,000. The Democrat was at 29,000. And then 20 minutes after the final count, the boys in New York City, who control the computerized elections on every election night, stole 33,000 votes from me and added them to the Democrat. And that, the screenshots of that are all at votefraud.org. That's votefraud.org, not voter fraud, because we're not so worried about a voter fraud, about a few people running around and voting twice, which probably happens. We're worried about vendor fraud, those who count the elections and have the computer programs, the secret computer programs, even secret from the public officials, that tell the computers what to do on election night. That's who we're worried about, Diebold and ES&S and Sequoia and Hart. Hart is the company used by Hamilton County. ES&S, or Election System and Software, is the company used by Butler County. And those four companies I just mentioned count 96% of the vote on election night in a national election. And 60% of that 96 is counted by ES&S out of Omaha, Nebraska. So the point is that even the Inquirer the next morning carried me with 36,202 votes. I have a copy of that Inquirer. But anybody who wants to see the screenshots of how things progressed through the night can go to votefraud.org and click on the link at the top of the homepage that says proof of vote manipulation in the Boehner-Condit race, so something like that. Now, I live in Cincinnati in White Oak, so somebody might say, well, how then can you run against John Boehner in Butler County? And this is another thing that everyone should be aware of, because I know you have a good audience and one from across the country. I'm trying to talk to younger people. I'm 61 years old now. I started out in political arena when I was 19. I was an alternate delegate to the Nixon convention. That was a life-changing experience I didn't ask for, but sometimes that's just what happens in life. And then I've run for office since I was 26. I'm now an old man of 61. So I want to talk to all the young people out there, and even people that might be in their 70s, how you run for office to make some impact. And we got to go with the cards we're dealt. If I was a billionaire, if I won, you know, $350 million in the lottery tomorrow, I could run, do everything first class and run to win and get it, and hire the people needed to be on the ground to get out the vote and to do the other things you need to do today extra to try to get a fair count. But I'm just a normal middle class guy, so I raise the money I can raise and go in and put some radio ads on that leads people to websites. So yeah, I would accept a victory, but if I gain traction, of course, all the local press would start to viciously attack me, as they have in the past, and if the more momentum you get, the more they attack you. And then if worse comes to worse, if they just don't like the result, I mean, according to the all-night results, I wasn't even close to Boehner. I was almost 100,000, well, I was more than 100,000 votes down with 20% of the vote. He had 60%, the Democrat had 16%, but somebody didn't like that, and they probably, because they don't want the third-party candidates, especially ones that say things like I do, they don't want to give the impression that there's any hope. The message given to the third-party candidates especially, and even the Ron Paul, how bad he lost, even though he won in many places where you could see people show up and could actually see the results, but in all the votes he lost so badly, that the message is, hey, give up, nobody likes you, there's no hope, the public isn't paying attention. So they didn't want a Constitution Party candidate, because that's the party I was running on against Boehner, to be able to point to 36,000 votes and say, hey, maybe we can build on this. However, if I raise money this time, I'm going to be beating them over the head the whole way with the theft that they did against me as they're doing against many other candidates. But we got the proof. We got the proof from these screenshots at this point. Now, and I was going to answer the question, how can I run against Boehner? Because if you're going to think of being a candidate to make an impact, and there's dozens and dozens of issues that you could pick to be your issues. Well, first of all, in Ohio now, I just had to get 25 signatures in the district. Secondly, you're ready to collect some money through a website or whatever and put on your messages to the public. And then thirdly, if you're running for Congress, it's in the actual Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, believe it or not, that anybody can run, no matter where they live, they can run for any congressional district in the state. So I or you who live in Ohio, we can run in Cleveland, we can run in Toledo, we can run in Akron, Youngstown, Columbus, or Cincinnati. But I chose to run in Butler County or Hamilton, Ohio, against John Boehner, which is about half hour north of me, because I realized that running against Boehner, the Speaker of the House, would probably get more attention. And sure enough, that's the only reason that the national networks carried on their crawl on election night 2010 that I was in second place, because probably some honest guys running the technical part at ABC and CBS and Channel 5 locally and the other stations probably just said, well, wait a minute, Boehner is a big race. If the Democrat isn't coming in second, we better carry all four of them, which was, you know, Boehner, me, the Constitution Party. Kasul was the Democrat, and Harley was the Libertarian. He got 4% all night. The Democrat was getting 16% more or less all night. So that's what you can do, too, in your state, your state, because it's in the U.S. Constitution. Run anywhere you want. And also, you know, realize that you have the right, if you're a congressional candidate or a federal candidate, to put radio ads on or television ads on, and the stations must accept them by the reasonable access law. Even if somebody would come on and say foul language for 1 minute, which I, of course, don't recommend, or even saying one foul word, but the stations would have to carry that ad. If a candidate came on and accused his opponent of something totally false, like he's been embezzling or he's done this or done that, the stations would have to carry it, and then they'd have to, in their news coverage, expose the lie, or the other candidate would have to file suit. That's how strong the reasonable access law is to allow you, as a federal candidate, as a congressional candidate, or a federal candidate, to get your message across. So that's just a little summary of, and of course in this race, we're starting a lot earlier. I'm going to try to raise a lot more money and put ads on here. And if we get anywhere near what I'm hoping, if we reach our goals, which is still up in the air, of several thousand people to commit $10 a month so we can really make an impact here, then we will also run ads in other places, not only in the Cincinnati area, where WLW reaches 90-mile radius to, you know, Columbus, Indianapolis, Lexington, Louisville, and so forth. But as a federal candidate, just like, you know, you'll hear of Senate candidates mailing across the country, like maybe Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz will mail all across the country to conservatives to get money for their campaigns. Well, if a congressional candidate can also run radio ads in other cities seeking financial support, and just because he, like I, feel it's good to educate all those people.
Well, certainly. So it's more so to get them, you know, a message out, because Boehner does have, you know, some, and we're working on getting those on the show, getting the people who are going to be, you know, challenging him in the primaries, and we'll see how that develops. But regardless, it's more about, you know, of course, you'd like to win as a Constitutional Party candidate, so it wouldn't be where you're running in the primary against Boehner. But let's say on any outside...
No. Just one little clarification. I'm sure you understand it, but let's make sure the audience understands. In the primary coming up in May, there's three Republicans running against Boehner in the Republican primary, okay?
Right.
I'm running in the Constitution Party without any opposition, not even a write-in opposition. So as long as one person in that district votes for me in the primary, then I will win and be on the ballot all the way to November. But in the Republican primary, either Boehner or one of his three opponents are gonna emerge, and they'll be on the Republican ballot till November, and then whoever wins the Democratic primary, they'll be on the ballot for the Democrats till November. I think the Green Party, the Libertarians, I don't think have a candidate, but the Green Party has a write-in candidate, I think.
Interesting. I'll have to check that out. I mean, I think I'm still technically a registered Republican, so I can vote in those primaries. And, I mean, I Boehner's got to go either way, either, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And,
now, do you live in Boehner's
district?
Do you live in Boehner's district or in Hamilton County?
I live in Hamilton County.
Okay, so you would probably be voting in Steve Chabot's primary then, but
right,
but
that,
yeah,
that's who I'd be voting for.
But
yeah,
Boehner,
for that primary, so I really wouldn't be able to. However, you know, I am, you know, as I said, actively working on getting, you know, John Boehner's opponents, because whether he gets,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I like to see him be beaten in the primary, not even get a shot.
Well, so would,
you know,
I.
Just with
so
all
I.
the resources he'd have behind him in order, you know, to run. I mean, I'd rather see, you know, one of his opponents get it, and then, you know, you three run, basically, well, the four out of the Constitution Party and the Green Party and the Republican Democrats in there. And then, you know, I mean, I would like to see that many, you know, folks running for it, but regardless, I think Boehner's got to go, whether through a primary or in the general election, because I don't think he's doing well for conservatism and also for the Republican Party.
Right, right. Now the I agree with you 100%. I'm first and foremost, I think and hope, an American that's concerned about his country. So nothing would be better than for Boehner to lose the Republican primary. A problem going on from where I'm sitting, though, is that the Tea Party folks up in that area, the whole district, have not been able to agree on a candidate, or at least there's several candidates running. Not, and they weren't willing to consolidate. So you got, I think, Eric Gurr, G-U-R-R, is one of the main opponents of Boehner. And I feel that, you know, he very well may come on your show if you get in contact with him. And the other one is a guy named, I think his name is Winterreg. I think that's what it is, like W-I-N-T-E-R-E-G-G or something like that. And he's a younger man. I think Eric Gurr's around 50 and 40 to 50 anyway, and Mr. Winterreg, I think, is around 30. And then there's another third Republican candidate running from more north in the district, because the district goes up about 8 counties up into Ohio. So, yeah, the main draw, let's go back for a minute as to why I got 36,000 votes in the 210 election before they stole 33,000 of them, which was 20 minutes again after the final vote. You know, you'll see in the screenshots, if you go into votefraud.org, the final vote, 100% of the precincts reporting was at 12:30 a.m. And 20 minutes later, there's a new final vote with 100% of the precincts reporting, and I'm down 33,000 votes, and the Democrat has an extra 33,000 votes. So then the results, again, came out like the public is supposed to expect. Boehner, 140,000, Democrat, 66,000, Libertarian, 4,000, and the poor little despised Constitution Party with 3,000 in last place after they got done manipulating it. Now, but why did I get 36,000 votes? And this is what I would advise the Republicans to do if they can make a move with some money on the media before the primary. Of course, they might start in April because that's still a full 30 days. But I would advise them to, in other words, it isn't Jim Conda Jr. that got the 36,000 votes, my name. I mean, some people heard my ads and my radio shows and may have agreed with them. But I believe the main reason I got that 36,000 votes was I had Constitution Party after my name. And people that despise Boehner politically for the same reason you and I do, and probably most of your listeners do, because he's a compromise. As there was a writer and thinker named Hilaire Belloc in England at the turn in the 1920s that said, or maybe it was G.K. Chesterton, one of those two, said, the liberals' job is to do bad things, and the conservatives' job is to make sure that those bad things never get undone. And this is what we hear like with Obamacare in many cases. That's why I did support, even though I don't support his foreign policy, I did support Ted Cruz's filibuster against against Obamacare. He was saying the right thing. Don't just fix it, undo it, and start with something that will not be a communist-style manipulation of the people in health care. And so at any rate, but the reason I got 36,000 votes, I believe, is not because of me. I could have been Johnny Jones or Susie Smith. And a lot of people are so mad at Washington. They're so mad at the Republicans and Democrats for just being kind of the same party with kind of bickering on secondary things that they cast the protest vote. And most people, especially in this district and many districts, are conservative, and they saw Constitution Party. Well, I don't want to vote for Boehner. I know the Democrats not going to win. I'm going to cast a protest vote for somebody that believes in the Constitution. And that's why I got those votes. But likewise, Eric Gurr or Mr. Winteregg running against John Boehner, and with both of them running, I don't know how. It looks very bleak that they can get the momentum. But
that's true.
They have to use that Boehner has betrayed the Republicans and the country in the sense that he hasn't fought for what's right. And therefore, to send a message to Washington, to send a message to the Republican Party that we want some backbone, vote for, let's say, Eric Gurr, or vote for Eric Gurr. That's what his message should be, and that's all his message should be. He could do the television commercials if he can afford it himself and say, now, you know, I'm a little different personality than John Boehner, but you'll get used to me and I'll fight for you. But we got to send a message to Washington. That's what my main message will be, and that's what their message should be. Now, there's about 250, I believe, polling places, maybe as many as 350 in the 8th District. And I also would suggest that the Tea Party people get somebody who are opposing Boehner. I don't think all the Tea Party people are opposing Boehner. That's another problem. But the ones that are, get someone at each one of those polling places. People are going into the polls to say vote for, you know, Eric Gurr if in the Republican primary. I'm going to probably try to get 250 people at the November election for my candidacy, the Constitution Party, and me in November. But they should do that in the primary. And if I had the money, I would do it in the primary. But I don't have the money yet. And they need those people there to try to remind people on the way in that they have a choice against Boehner. So that would be my suggestion to the Tea Party and to Eric Gurr and or Mr. Winteregg.
Well, I think that, you know, and very soon, I mean, we're already talking about May 6th, and that'll be here definitely before you know it. I mean, it's already almost middle of March here.
Right.
But, I mean, what I think the conservatives ought to do, and I don't even know if the Tea Party – it would be wise for the Tea Party to throw another candidate in the mix, because I think that those who are running against Boehner in the primary should actually find out which one of those, if there is indeed the two or three, which one of those has the best shot of beating Boehner. Because, if, you know, for the conservatives can coalesce around them to vote for him in the primary, whether it's Gurr or Winteregg or whoever. They need to coalesce around that, and quickly, in my opinion, to do that so that they can garner the conservative support so they can, you know, get a good base against Boehner there in the primary. Because, I mean, look what happened with all the conservatives that, you know, that were in the Republican primary for the presidential primary in 2012. You had, you know, a number of conservatives, and they were splitting the conservative vote. Now, some would contend that, you know, some of the candidates in there weren't so much plants, but they were kind of there to split the Republican vote and, you know, or the conservative vote.
You're talking about in 2012?
Yes. I'm talking about the 2012 primary. And we'll touch on that later on in the program. But if they don't coalesce, as I said, if the conservatives don't coalesce against one candidate, then it's almost, you know, a no game. It means it's going to be Boehner definitely to win, because they'll have it so split up of the people who don't want to vote for Boehner in the primary voting for, you know, one of the three candidates. And
well,
that's not going to help out at all.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And if they can't coalesce, it makes it more difficult, because Boehner is going to start running ads. He's got, I think, over $7 million in the bank, maybe more. It's just like Mitch McConnell, who's a complete, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know what these guys, how they would defend themselves against the charge of treason for some of the votes they've cast on allowing you know, people to be held without detention under the Patriot Act, and that type of thing. I don't know how they would defend themselves against charges of subversion and treason. But Mitch McConnell's running omnipresent ads on the radio bashing his opponent, Matt Bevin. Matt Bevin, I guess, doesn't have the money to answer. But this is what Boehner will start doing in April, he may not do anything if their polls show that the other candidates have no name recognition. He may just save it for who knows what, you know. But at any rate, I don't think he did a lot of advertising. He certainly didn't do any appearing that I'm aware of in the last 2010 or 2012 election.
Well, no, I was at a Tea Party meeting on Monday evening. And Congressman Winstrup was there. I spoke with him very briefly, get some.
Oh, you were in Delhi.
His.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were in Delhi.
And I was over in the Delhi area. The meeting was, and I spoke with him briefly. Spoke with his communications director, and hopefully this weekend I'll be able to get in contact with her to get Winstrup on. And he sounds like he's pretty amicable about being on the show. But I also spoke with some folks there from. The campaign that you were just talking about, and we're going to look to have him on as well. So we've got some things in the works.
Now, who is the second person? Who is the second person besides Winstrup?
Winstrup, and then I spoke with his communications director, and then you just mentioned his name. I have to get my file to see
Steve
exactly
Shabbat.
Who I. No, not Steve Shabbat. No, he wasn't there. Gosh, we were just. I'll have to get back to you on that. I'll have to look at the list. I've got a number of folks. Well, I want to make sure as well, because I've got a number of folks I've been speaking with, so I don't want to get them all jumbled up. I'll have that information by the end of the program. Of course, it'll also be something I'm sure the audience would be interested in hearing. So we've got a number of folks that we'll be talking about. But one of the things definitely we hear you railing about is the way the voting system is, especially with the electronic. And, of course, we remember about the hanging chads. Would you suggest, or I would say support, us going back to the paper ballots, or at least the portion ballots?
And actually the only national organization, even though they have almost no visibility, the Constitution Party, and I've been a Republican all my life, too, only as I didn't want to be in the Democrat Party. But I have always realized since 1972 that the Republican Party was – as Pat Buchanan says, the Democrats and Republicans at the national level are two wings on the same bird of prey. And before, I know that you, I think you want to bring more people into the discussion, but before we do that, maybe I could talk for a minute about what's wrong with Congress and what's wrong with the country politically.
Certainly.
I don't want to pick on John Boehner any more than 98% of the rest of the Congress, because this is not like a grudge match. I'm going to make it an all-out thing between me and John Boehner. John Boehner's no worse or no better than 98% of the Republicans in Congress and in the country. And here's the problem. And it goes, we got 50 states and 3,141 counties, 88 counties in Ohio, 67 counties in Florida, 99 counties in Iowa, and so forth, amounting to 3,141. Now, if you look at all of the congressmen, maybe there's one or two or three who don't fit under this, and all of the senators, maybe Rand Paul is trying to outsmart them and doesn't fit under this, and all of the party leaders in both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party who are, the Democrats and Republicans run every county in the United States, as far as I know. There's no group that if I went to their county commissioners, they would say, oh, no, we're libertarians. We got two libertarians and one Democrat, or we got two Green Party or two Constitution Party and one Republican. There's not one county in the country that on their county commissioners running the county is not Republicans and Democrats, as far as I know. Now, all of these people, whether they know it or not, this includes Boehner. Let's understand what I'm saying here, because I don't want it to be misconstrued. For instance, John Boehner had nothing to do with that vote manipulation in 2010, and neither did the Democrat who benefited from it, Mr. Kasul, who I met at one forum and seemed to be a nice very well dressed young lawyer, really a nice young man. I'm not accusing my opponents of manipulating the vote. I'm accusing the boys in New York City at National Election Pool, which we can talk about maybe. They're the ones, in conjunction with the five TV networks and the four major vendors like Diebold and ES, they're the ones who have a vote crime syndicate that warps the vote, unbeknownst to the American people. And why is it unbeknownst? Because the owners of the system, or the National Election Pool anyway, that part of the system, are the five TV networks. And Clear Channel, likewise, is under the same financial strings and is unable, there's nobody will discuss this, not Hannity, not O'Reilly, not Glenn Beck, not Bill Cunningham, not anybody that's in the major media will discuss this unless they're forced to for a few minutes. Brian Thomas, who does a great job on many subjects and is good on Precinct here in Cincinnati on WKRC, probably the best talk show host in the country promoting get in your precinct and get active, will not let there too many seconds be discussed on this matter of the illegal secret computer accounts we have. I don't know what the deal is on all these stations, but what I'm saying is whether they know it or not, they are arms or they are local representatives for the international banking establishment. Now, in a movie like Jerry Maguire, okay, everybody thinks it's real cool to say, follow the money, follow the money. If some small town crook is being exposed for embezzlement, follow the money, Well, how about let's following the money at the top of the world where it really counts? The people who can issue all the money they want in secret, like the Federal Reserve Board, Goldman Sachs, which is also a bank, unbeknownst to most people, the International Monetary Fund, all these mysterious organizations which are basically operate in secret as far as what their policies are and how they're arrived at, they can issue unlimited money because they have the ability to do it in secret. And they can hire the polling organizations, the think tanks that we've heard of and that we've never heard of, the assassination squads when they need to kill somebody like President Kennedy or Bobby Kennedy, and they don't have, since they got the computer vote fraud in, they don't need to kill anybody anymore. They just beat them at the electronic computer thing, you know, if there's somebody like Ron Paul or Pat Buchanan that was gaining traction. So that's where the money, now all of these Republican and Democratic Party leaders in all the counties, again, there might be one or two exceptions that might be a little bit of mavericks, but they're not in small counties. But and all of the congressmen, they are in effect under the sway or almost like representatives of this international banking establishment, which is behind both parties at the national level. Okay. Now, we need, as we the people, you know, we need, and this is what the Tea Party is trying to do, and I'm sorry to say it because I may start offending my own potential supporters here, in a very confused way. The Tea Party is attempting to restore the country in a very confused way because they and the Tea Party are following false opposition that has been erected or at least is kept in public view by the same international banking establishment. I'm talking about Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, O'Reilly. All these people pretend to be fearless, but they will not get on certain subjects. And if they did, mm-hmm. they would be bounced out of the national media very quickly. But at any rate, and same with the congressman. The one congressman who went off the reservation in the last 15 years was Congressman Jim Traficant of Youngstown, who served 7 years in jail for his virtues. I don't think he did anything wrong. I studied it. I feel sure he did not do anything wrong. But even if he did something wrong, he didn't go to jail for doing something wrong. If that was the case, 98% of Congress would be in jail for money, funny business, and that type of thing, many of them seduced into it. But he went to jail for what he did right, that he was standing up for the American people against the IRS and in a few other areas. And George Hansen, a congressman from Idaho, who was a Mormon, went to jail for fighting the IRS in the 1980s. Absolutely, totally trumped up unjust charges. They really persecuted that man mostly in the dark, as Traficant was mostly persecuted in the dark. So we need to get in there, and this is where the Pat Buchanan movement in 1992, 96, and 2000, and the Ron Paul movement, 2008 and 2012, or the only visible movements that got visible enough to try to move things in the direction of people that are not beholden to those banking establishments, and that they are going to stand up for the true freedoms of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights instead of being in a playpen because they're beholden to the, or have gotten ensnared in the mesh of this international banking establishment and its all of its tentacles and its plans for a, you know, for a, as some people call it, a new world order or a police state type tyranny worldwide, whether it be a soft tyranny or a hard tyranny. I don't know what they're planning. But we need people that are going to stand up for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And to do that, the only way to do it is to get into the precincts and either elect constitutionalists as head of the Democrat and Republican Party, which is the ones that have power now, or you know, have a party in one county like the Constitution Party become so numerous that they can't deny that they have people elected and that they then their party becomes meaningful. But right now, quite frankly, even though I'm running as a Constitution Party candidate, the battleground to take back the country is in the precincts of the Democrat and Republican Party. It is the Democrat and Republican Party that run every county, and they have to be thrown out. The leadership that they're now has to be thrown out and replaced with Republicans and Democrats that will stand up for the Constitution. So that's what we're facing. Now, John Boehner went to Muller High School. I went to St. Xavier High School. I'm the oldest of 11 kids. He's in the middle of 13 kids. The difference between myself and Boehner and most of these guys is that, by the grace of God, I saw through this what's in the background of our politics when I was 19, and I truly mean by the grace of God, for when I was picked to be an alternate delegate to the Nixon convention because I had helped pass out literature for the Republicans, and they wanted some minorities and young people down there because Nixon had it sewn up. He was, you know, had been president for 4 years by then. I learned things, and people sent me things because I was an honorary delegate that opened my eyes to these background forces. And they talked about the Council on Foreign Relations then the Trilateral Commission a little later, and so forth. But as I got into it more, I realized the money and the brains come from the powers behind the Fed and the Goldman Sachs and the IMF and the International Banking Association. And guys like Boehner, I never heard a word about this. I never heard a word about this at Xavier High School, Xavier University, never heard a word about anything we're talking about here. Didn't even hear about precincts, that was the way the party leaders were chosen. And guys like Boehner, from what I can tell, went to Congress and made their life ambitions without being told by anybody what they were going to run into when they got to Washington. And therefore, they thought, well, gee, at least if I survive, I can do some good things, you know, if I survive in office. Whatever it is, they've been pulled into this mesh of this evil establishment that is moving the world in the wrong directions on so many fronts. And I don't know, in some of their cases, and I'm not accusing anybody individually, but some cases they may be blackmailed. These forces attempt to blackmail every public official they can with money or with women or with, God forbid, little boys, whatever they can attempt a person to get some dirt on them so they can have them blackmailed. And they try that with all the public officials. Or if they just are in the situation where they like to be on, you know, in the money and in the spotlight. So, for instance, Jim Traficant, who stood up for the American people against the IRS in a way that most people probably don't even realize what he did in 1997, and got passed through Congress with some clever maneuverings that Clinton had to sign because it was one of these budget bills. He ends up totally broke and in prison for 7 years and now up in Youngstown just trying to make ends meet. Now let's take somebody like John Kasich or Mitch McConnell or a lot of other people that you could look at. Joe Scarborough, who's now the morning host on MSNBC, when they play ball with the background forces, when they realize, well, I better play ball because, boy, these guys are really powerful, and, boy, they're offering money. Well, Kasich is probably worth $10 million. They take these guys and they put them on boards of directors, and the guys that go to Congress with normal net worth come out 10 years later worth millions of dollars on a salary of $160,000 a year. Now, I'd surely like to have a salary of $160,000 a year, and I think most people listening would. That's what Congress would get.
Yeah, me too.
But how do you get $160,000 a year when you got to live in two places like Cincinnati and or Hamilton, Ohio, and Washington, D.C.? How do you, at the end of 10 years or 20 years, because you're going to be spending at least, you know, to live in two different cities, $100,000 or $120,000, how do you, at the end of 10 years, become worth $5-10 million personally? And this happens over and over again. So, you know, a lot of these guys don't go to Washington or even now don't want to see America go down or don't want to see the country betrayed. But they get in the wrong, they start listening to the wrong people. The wrong people do a lot of favors for them, make sure they have money, blah, 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 blah. I'm talking about in their campaigns and so forth. And they, in other words, they just get used to listening to the wrong people. Same would go for Mike McConnell and Bill Cunningham, who talks. Mike McConnell was a talk show host here. Bill Cunningham is. They're taking their updates every day from the Weekly Standard and all these phony conservative operations, and they don't look at the information that's readily available on a lot of key issues that I look at. Now, the last thing that I would say, and at the end of this long-time filibuster I'm doing here, Robert, on your show, is that the real group out there, in my humble opinion, or some people might say not-so-humble opinion, is GuardiansForLiberty.com. That's just how it sounds, Guardians for, F-O-R, GuardiansForLiberty.com. There's a seven-point program there. I believe one of your regular guests, Kelly Mordecai, is Kelly Mordecai, and he's one of the and he's one of the leaders of that group. And if anybody wants to go look there, it's got seven action principles to take back the country, and I believe they are the only seven that have to be followed if we're going to take back the country. And the Tea Party is in an endless round. I'm not urging anybody to quit any Tea Party groups because we're not, Guardians for Liberty is not extensive yet. But everyone should also join Guardians for Liberty, which right now just means signing up for the email list. Soon, God willing, we're going to be offering a simple social networking site that will allow people to sign up by state and county and zip code so we can help everyone in all the 3,000 counties start meeting to run for precinct in the party of their choice, whether it be Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Constitution. Show people
Green
how the
party.
System works. Green Party, yeah, and show people how the system works. But at any rate, so I just want to mention that, and we maybe could go, but the Tea Party, one of their principles is even completely wrong as it stands, free markets. Free markets is only good if everybody's doing free markets. So, for instance, Pat Buchanan said we want free trade, but we can't be trade wimps. In other words, we can't let it is happening right now. China put tremendous tariffs on our goods, and we put no tariffs on our goods. So all the jobs have gone to China, and we are lacking jobs in this country of the type where young men could go out and get a factory job and support a wife and kids. That most people that can find a job are struggling, or they're working at a restaurant or something like that. You know, so many of the manufacturing jobs have gone overseas, and this was a very sinister plan by design going back to World War II, when the United States helped Mao Zedong get into the power, the communists get into the power on the mainland, and drove Chiang Kai-shek and the free Chinese over to Taiwan. And China has now become the biggest limited corporation in the history of the world, run by the international bankers. It's like their own limited slave labor corporation. But I'm getting a little bit of field here. But you'll never hear even what I just said. You'd never hear that from I don't think anybody in Congress would dare to say something like that. But at any rate, so yeah, GuardiansForLiberty.com is the group with the real principles that can save the country. If all the Tea Party people don't wake up to that, then we're going to end up, again, they're all going to end up supporting another Romney maybe in 2016. And, you know, Romney was against a lot of the Tea Party principles, but when came to election time, well, Obama's so bad we have to support Romney, even though we don't agree with anything about him, or he doesn't agree with us in many things. And
real quick, I just make a comment. Through my understanding, because I've seen some video, and I really wish I would have made audio clips out of them, but there was even where Santorum said he didn't like the Tea Party. He was against the Tea Party.
No, I could believe that. Santorum is again, I'm talking politically here. I'm not trying to attack the persons of these people. Santorum has some good stance, but he's a disgraceful public figure. He is totally in the pocket of these big financial forces, and I don't know how dumb these guys are, if they deliberately sell out to some extent. But for a guy who says he's pro-life on abortion, which I'm happy about, he then talks about nuclear bombing Iran if he gets out of bed on the wrong side of the table on Meet the Press, or he would bomb them anyway if he gets out of bed on the wrong side one day, and all this kind of stuff. And he's on the total warmongering, let's have perpetual war mentality of the two-party system. I don't know what the Obama supporters think. Obama was bombing more countries within the last year, 7 countries in all, than any president has ever bombed at any time with no war declared. And yet he got the Nobel Peace Prize, which is a joke.
That's ridiculous.
And yeah. Him getting the Nobel Peace Prize about 1 month into his phony presidency is about like guy coming up from the minor leagues and striking out every time for his first 5 times at bat and getting the most valuable player award before the season is even rolling. It is totally absurd. And Obama, of course, is doing worse, much worse, even than Bush, even though Bush was doing terrible, on bringing in the police state. They now have admitted NSA could potentially snooping on everybody's email, cell phone, you name it. They're building, by their own government admission, 30,000 killer drones to fly over the United States every day. That would be 10 drones per county. These drones will have the ability to shoot people's houses out and so forth. And they'll say, oh, no, we'll never do that. Well, that's what bad governments always say right before they do it. So anyway, guardiansforliberty.com, there's been a lot of effort and thought put into that website with its 7 action programs, including Precinct, revitalizing the Second Amendment the way the Founding Fathers envisioned it. That not only means keeping and bearing arms for individuals, but a well-regulated militia was meant to be under the governor and the counties to be a counterbalance against an overweening federal government. That's all in the works of Dr. Edwin Vieira, who wrote several books, one of which is Constitutional Homeland Security, playing on that odious phrase of Homeland Security. Another one is, I think, called The Sword and the Purse, I believe, something like that, 2,000 pages. And Honest Elections and Honest Money and so on and so forth. So guardiansforliberty.com is what we will attempt to be, a organization that is not under false opposition, and hopefully attract a lot of the Tea Party people to work with us, even if they keep working with their Tea Party. But if they start working with us and start comparing to the Tea Party, we're either going to cause the Tea Party to shape up or start to lose credibility. Because, for instance, the Tea Party nowhere, as far as I know, in any significant way, demands honest elections. They don't demand the verifiable elections. And it is poo-pooed in most Tea Parties. This is not a place that they want to go. And I know a lot of the grassroots is interested in this because they want honest elections, but the leadership at the state and national levels where there is national groups, such as Tea Party Patriots, which Sean Hannity promotes, led by a gal named Jenny Beth Martin, who I sat down to next to the farm and told her about this voting problem. And I know other people in other parts of the country have told her about this. And she looked at me and said, that's kind of hard to believe. And I told her where to go to look up. But that group, for instance, will absolutely not bring up the easily rigged computer elections and the alternative of transparent paper ballots counted at each precinct by neighbors in that precinct that are, you know, selected in advance by some kind of a fair process. Campaign for Liberty, which is Ron Paul's group, will not bring up the election issue. Now, Ron Paul alluded to it several times in the campaign, but Campaign for Liberty, led by John Tate will not bring this up. And quite frankly, I plan to keep going past 2012 and run for 2014 and run for 2016. I'm going to be putting pressure, if I can get the money to go public with these ads, on Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, and the Campaign for Liberty and his campaign to bring this up front and center, because he has no chance if there's not a transparent count. And we have Rand Paul on tape in 2007, before he was a senator, giving a beautiful statement about how we need transparent elections, and meaning elections where you can see what's happening, and you have checks and balances, and you have real balance, not just electricity that somebody can manipulate in a, you know, bleeps that someone can manipulate in a computer and then say, oh, here's the result, which is what happens now. And but we got a beautiful statement from Rand Paul, and I'm going to be playing that on my website. And I know he knows all this. I know his dad all knows all this. I'm not accusing. I think the Paul family are patriots, and they're trying to do the best they can. But we're going to be pressing them and everybody else to start demanding this, because demanding honest elections is not like I'm a sore loser in advance, or that this candidate or that candidate or Rand Paul is a sore loser in advance. If I'm running for office and I'm asking people, donate money to me, give some time, and invest, everybody's so busy today, is invest some time, invest some money, and work for me, then I'm asking for a transparent for my supporters. And that's what everybody should be doing. Yes, I as a candidate would like to have a fair count, but my supporters have a constitutional right to a fair count. You know, two Supreme Court decisions have said that our right to vote consists of two things. First, the right to cast a ballot. Second, the right to know that it was counted accurately. And since 1988, when 99% of the country is counted on secret computer programs, we do still cast a ballot, but we don't know if our vote was accounted right or not. And when those ballots disappear for 21 days between when you vote and I vote and the recount 21 days later, if anybody even asked for a recount, that's what we call in the legal system, the chain of evidence is broken. In other words, and this is the way it always was before 1970, when the ballots disappear from the sight of the judges before they're counted in the open, then they had to retake the vote. They had to throw all the ballots out and retake the vote at each precinct that happened in, which was rare. But that's right now, when they snatch those ballots away from, you know, where you vote and I vote and all throughout Ohio and take them downtown behind police guard, where anybody will be arrested if they ask to see any ballots on election day, then this is what you call breaking the chain of evidence. And even if they bring it out 3 hours later, that's still time for somebody cleverly to switch the ballots. And that's probably not something we got time here to go into, but it wouldn't be that hard. Remember, the entire future of the city, the state, the country, and the world is at stake in these United States elections. These elections in our own United States, the entire future of the world. And that's why the Collier brothers wrote a book before each of them died 5 years apart of cancer. In 1992, they came out with a book called Vote Scam, The Stealing of America. There'll never be a better title for this subject than that, Vote Scam, The Stealing of America. And I might add, for the notes of people, if they want to investigate this, there's an HBO documentary called Hacking Democracy, which gives you the gist of it. There's a few little things I would object to in it. But it gives you a very minor compared to, they give you the idea of how secret computer counts can steal elections. Bev Harris of Black Box Voting is the kind of the star of that documentary. And then there is also the book Black Box Voting by Bev Harris, which is for free at blackboxvoting.org. And if you go to votefraud.org, my website, if you go down the right-hand side in the blue column called Vote Fraud 101, you'll see a lot of articles there. Some of them are very short, some of them are a little longer, but you'll see a lot of articles there where if you read down through them, you'll become quite the expert on this subject and on what we need to do to fix our voting system. So,
well, Jim, at this point, I see it's about 5 minutes to the top of the hour, and so if anyone listening out there in the chat wants to chime in, you can do so at 347 845-7428 and speak with our guests tonight as well as our panelists and contributors. And we will start opening up the mics for our contributor. We'll do this in line with people calling in. And so first we're going to have on Dan Gray, and then after that we'll be bringing on Kelly Mordecai. And then we do have James Neighbors in. We have Cindy Todd in as well, and then we'll be opening up the mics to the audience. And so we'll have all of our panelists and contributors in, but, you know, by the bottom of next hour. So first we will start in Dan. Dan, thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm tired, Bob, tell you the truth. I've been going since 6 o'clock this morning. Just got back from a Campaign for Liberty meeting with a guy who is a citizen, not elected to anything, who is championing property tax reform here in Pennsylvania, which is a big deal. And we had Dean Klopp's group. He was on a couple weeks ago with you,
right,
week and a half. And he had all the candidates for the Pennsylvania local offices invited, and a number of them showed up. So it was a good town hall. Listen, Mr. Condit, before I ask any questions, I do want to mention a couple of things because I've been taking some notes here.
Sure.
First of all, I want to mention that in the interest of full disclosure, I am also a registered Constitution Party member. And
okay,
the first thing I will ask you, which I'm sure you won't have to prepare for, is to explain to our listeners what the Constitution stands for, what the Constitution Party's platform is. I want to mention that you were the only congressman to vote not to censure Congressman Traficant.
No. You're thinking of another person.
I
named
am?
Gary Condit. Gary Condit was the congressman.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I never was in Congress, and I've said at public gatherings, I'm mad at Gary Condit because he ruined my name nationally before I could do it. You know.
Oh, well, there you go.
But you remember he was in the scandal with Chandra Levy.
Yes.
And having an affair with her, which I think that alone should do, if someone is caught having an affair in public, I believe they should resign just for the good of the children, if you will. But Gary Condit did that. He was the only one, because they were kicking, he was on the way out anyway, that voted not to censure Traficant, you're right. And somebody at a Arizona meeting, probably, I'm going to say 16 years ago now, time flies when we're having fun and not having fun, but somebody raised their hand in Arizona and said, maybe everyone else is afraid to ask you this, but are you related to Gary Condit? Okay. So I said, well, there's no reason to be afraid to ask me. I said, not that I know of, but I said, he does look a bit like a number of my uncles who are, you know, maybe a generation older than me. He looked like them when they were younger. So I said, probably 5 generations back in Ireland, maybe, because I think he's mostly Irish and I'm half Irish. My dad was just about all Irish. Probably 5 generations back we were related, but as far as now, I don't know of any. But, no, that is a different guy. But,
okay.
I wish I would have been there. I can't believe that not one other congressman stood up for Traficant there.
Well,
he
did stand up against the IRS. I also want to mention, first of all, and I'm very pleased that not only do you know who all the players are, and with some detail, but you seem willing to mention their names, ask Bob if he'd be willing to get them on the show. In other words, if they're for the same basic constitutional principles, the basic purposes of restoring liberty, you're not their enemy.
I'd be willing to. I mean, things are so bad right now. Now, and when I say so bad, I mean the trend of things. All of us still live better than the kings in the Middle Ages with all the technological advances. But financial collapse, a totally unnecessary one, is threatening us, it seems, almost weekly on the news. And I realize what's happened to most of these congressmen. And by the way, Dan, I'm going to answer your question on the Constitution Party. And let me say, Robert and Dan, I wish I had as nice a radio voice as Dan does. You have a great radio voice, Dan.
Well, thank you.
But the Constitution Party was founded by Howard Phillips. I mean, just answer the other thing first. I would forgive and forget quickly if somebody stood up and said, look, I got caught up in this Washington thing. I'm going to stand up for America, and I'm going to stand up for the Bill of Rights, for the Constitution and the true freedoms in the Constitution. I would say forgive and forget quickly as long as they follow it with actions, because I know what's happened to most of these people. As they say, there but for the grace of God go I. I mean, I could have, if I wasn't shown these things, not by my own merit, God like took my head and said, look, when I was given certain pieces of information at 19, look at this. And I didn't want to believe it at first. It took me 4 or 5 months to realize that, yeah, there were background forces. And yes, the media seemed to be basically controlled by the same people, and they covered the same things every day and censored the same things every day then as they do now in many cases, or at least censor by de-emphasis. So, yeah, we are not trying to be the enemy. That's why I don't want to attack John Boehner any more than the rest of the Congress. It would be a waste and beneath the dignity of the campaign to make this like, oh, we found John Boehner cried in Congress, or he cried. That is totally irrelevant. You know, we're looking for people that, regardless of any faults, will stand up for the people. Now, the Constitution Party was founded in 1992 by Howard Phillips, who passed away, unfortunately, last year on April 20th. I remember that day because my youngest daughter got married that day, and I've heard about it later. Howard was a great guy. He had been active since the 70s. He founded it as the U.S. Taxpayers Party, and then in the year 2000, the name was changed to the Constitution Party. And the Constitution Party is like it sounds. It was meant to stand up for the Constitution and the rights and freedoms of the people and the checks and balances of the Constitution. At my website, which I guess I should mention, which is wagthedog247.com is the easiest to remember. Well, I'll take that back. We just got a pointer to my other website. My other website is Jim Conner Jr. for Congress2014.com, something that nobody could remember. But we just got, thanks to one of the party members here in Ohio, they emailed me and said, hey, let freedomring2014.com is available. So I think everybody can remember that. Let freedomring 2014, so you add the year in, let freedomring2014.com, and if you just go a little bit down the website, it's just in its initial stages, but I got a link to the Constitution Party's platform, so the national platform. So right there, anybody can get in there, and I basically agree with all of the issues in that platform. Basically, there's a few we might have some discussion on. Like the Electoral College, I think they have something in there against the Electoral. I'm not totally sure on that one. On the money issue, I would want to add in something that says a formula for how, if we took over the Federal Reserve, if we fired the Federal Reserve, or better yet, put them in prison, but if we got rid of the Federal Reserve, you just sent them home and put a national monetary office under constitutionalists, how would we run it? How would we know how much money to put into circulation to stop the depression, recession, boom and bust cycle? And I would want the formula put in there that is basically that we would issue money based on the goods and services available in the country. And right now, with the technology available, you can put gold and silver or platinum or copper strands in the money if we wanted to do it. You can actually, you know how they got money with all these holograms and strips? You could actually put gold in the money. I know somebody in California that's working full time on this, and it's a good idea, because while nobody's asked you or me when we go through McDonald's, hey, do you have any gold to back up that $10 bill? However, we know from history that either by accident sometimes or on purpose sometimes, the ruling elite in the country crashes and the paper money's worth nothing. So then you got to have something that, like gold and silver, that is recognized universally as intrinsic value. But that is a separate question from how much money should be issued in circulation. And even Austrian economics does not address that issue, to my knowledge, in any satisfactory way. But anyway, so that I would want to add that into the money thing. But basically, I endorse the Constitution Party platform, and it is the only national organization, even with its little visibility, that has demanded transparent elections since 1992. Howard Phillips was aware of this issue before we ever met. I was aware of it since 79. He was aware of it before that because he was older than I was. And I will just say one thing, and a lot of people, when I was at a Constitution Party meeting in Ohio for earlier last year, I got up to speak for a few minutes. I said, how many people have ever heard of Howard Phillips, the founder of the party? And only about 7 or 8 people out of 60 raised their hands. But I will say this, Howard Phillips was a great guy, and he was a mentor of mine in many ways. When we sat down at a March for Life at the Marriott Hotel there, or whatever the big hotel is there, they use the pro-lifers usually meet at, Howard and I sat down for lunch by pre-appointment with one or two other people present, and it was like we knew each other all our lives. He was one of the guys I've sat down with a few people in my life that it's like you knew them all your life, and you were immediately comfortable, and we're talking back and forth like you'd known each other for years. So I like Howard as well as the fact that he was a man of tremendous vision, and he used to say, "To achieve victory, first we must seek it." And he
Tim.
I do want to bring in, trying to keep a good time here to bring all the folks in, because we also have
some folks in the audience
who'd like to chime in as well.
Yeah.
But for the folks, first hear about, the Constitution Party, if you want to go back into the archives here on the show, during the 2012 election, especially after the Republican convention, we interviewed a number of Constitutional Party candidates. And we also interviewed Randall Stufflebeam, Randy Stufflebeam, who is the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party. So we've had him on the show as well. And we also got the opportunity to interview Jim Clymer, who was the vice presidential candidate. So you could find an interview with him on the show in the archives. And we also interviewed, and he's been on the show a couple of times, Virgil Goode, who was running for president and was on the Ohio ballot for the Constitution Party back in 2012. So if anyone wants to hear more about them or hear some of the candidates, check in the archives. We had those, and I actually got the opportunity to meet Virgil Goode when he was running for president, salt of the earth guy. I really liked him, and in full disclosure, that's who I voted for. For president,
So did I.
In 2012 with Virgil Goode. But at this time, I do want to bring in another one of our panelists, and that will be Kelly. And Kelly, Mr. Conner Jr., so I'm going to bring you open. And then after Kelly, we will have James Neighbors and then Cindy Todd. And then we'll start to bring in the audience callers to speak with our guests and our panelists tonight. So thank you very much, Kelly, for coming to the show. We've got about, about 10 minutes before I bring in James, so go ahead.
Well, okay. Well, hi, Jim. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hey, Jim and I, we're on Guardians for Liberty, and Jim fully understands the problems we're facing, and he helped develop the principles. We've got people from, Florida and Arizona, Ohio, California.
Colorado.
Yeah. And, So Jim is aware of this. The principles are pretty much what he, definitely he agrees with these. But Jim, here's one problem if you become elected, and I hope you do, is when you become elected as a congressman, I'm going to have to call you a baboon.
Okay.
And the reason is because a group of baboons is called a Congress.
Is that right? Okay. I would not be offended.
Well, it wouldn't be racist to call Obama's administration a bunch of ravens then, because they call or crows, because they call it a murder of crows.
Well,
and he's certainly willing to do that with drones overseas, possibly here.
Yeah.
Well, I got a couple more points I want to get to, but I'll tell you a little bit more about Jim. I was on Facebook, and came across Watch the Vote. And thanks to Jim, I'm very frustrated with Jim because he made me more aware of the electronic election fraud than I ever wanted to know. And then we started seeing data pop up where mathematicians and engineers were proving that some of these votes have been flipped, particularly Ron Paul, South Carolina. He actually was second. Ohio, Santorum actually won. They did vote flipping. It's just spooky. And you go into the depths of this, it's something that it doesn't matter how hard we work or what we believe, we have got to get on this. And Edward True, he was a member of Watch the Vote. Because of him, our group, we knew that Santorum actually won Iowa before everybody else did because of the work he did there. He just simply went to his caucus, counted the real numbers, and when you add them up, actually it was Santorum that won. It was the first time in American history when a party flipped the winner in a primary.
In a major caucus, yeah.
Yeah, and he got on CNN and screamed. Yeah, and they had there was so much pressure. So, I mean, folks, this is actually stuff we can do. That's what Guardians for Liberty is about. And I also have probably a little bit of time, but I want to hear it from the horse's mouth or hopefully the baboon's mouth. So I've introduced this idea of a constitutional challenge, and we had Bob Ghisardi from Pennsylvania, the gubernatorial candidate. I took him through a bunch of questions just to see where he's at, his knowledge of the Constitution. So I asked Jim on one of our conference calls, I said, hey, would you be interested in taking a constitutional challenge? And I'll explain it again to everybody. It's a town hall meeting. It's a job interview for candidates. They come, and they're asked 20 questions, multiple choice, true, false. It has a point system. And, you know, at the end of the night, we see who wins. And this weeds out people who say, oh, I love the Constitution. Well, then prove it. You know, job interview. And so I asked Jim a couple weeks ago if he would be willing to do this. And do you remember what you said, Jim?
Yeah, I said I would certainly be willing to do it. And, you know, you're talking about the constitutional challenge and just showing up and having a debate with other people in your own party or with people of other parties before a Tea Party group or something like that.
Yeah, it's not really a debate. It's a job interview with questions. But I remember your words. Your word was gladly. And, oh, and by the way, we got another one, a State House candidate named Christine Timmons in Florida. Talked with her, and she was really glad to do it. And it's a tactical advantage, I believe. And, by the way, that whole concept, you can download it from the front page of guardiansforliberty.com. And that's kind of but notice, I noticed, if you love the Constitution, you're not afraid of this challenge. And I was really impressed when over the phone Jim said gladly. So I just, you know, I can't say enough good things about Jim. So that's kind of my take on Jim there.
Well, definitely.
Well, Kelly, thank you.
We'll have some time tonight, Kelly, to actually ask, you know, we can have on the air here some of what those questions are from the constitutional challenge. But at this time, I will be bringing in James Neighbors. And, of course, folks out there may know him as the founder of the Overpasses for America. And so, James, getting you on the line here. Open up your mic. How are you, James?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Robert, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you. It's good to hear you. How's your neck doing?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, it was doing great for the last 10 days. And whew, we went from 80 degrees to under 30 degrees last night and woke up this morning and holy cow, but
yeah,
what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do?
Well, I appreciate
you
fighting through it, James, to come on tonight. Thank you.
It's no problem, no problem at all. I did have a question, and this one might actually take a little bit of time to answer, and that's good, though. What do you think the number one problem that we have facing America in Washington, D.C. right now, and what would you do to fix that?
Is that a question for me, or who's it?
Yes,
for you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I want to thank Kelly for his all too kind words. And believe me, there's a lot that I could learn from scholars on the Constitution of the fine points, but I certainly believe that even if it's a learning experience for the candidate, any sincere candidate should be willing to have the job interview that Kelly's suggesting here. Now, what is the number one problem? That is like me thinking of being at the end of a war and half the people are dying of starvation and half the people are dying of disease and the enemy army is coming at you. There's so many different things you can get on and say, gee, this is the most critical thing of the moment. One of our collaborators in Guardians for Liberty, Judy Spady, is running the website for Defend Not Amend, where her and Richard Fry and a number of others are fighting Mark Levin's group and others. They do not want the Article 5 Constitutional Convention to come together, which would be, you know, that would allow the same groups we got in Congress and the State House to go to the this Article 5 convention, and apparently everything in the Constitution would be up for grabs, like, oh, let's vote to end the Second Amendment. Okay. I've said to these people, and I asked Judy and the others who were talking to some of them, you know, if it's going to be Dan and Robert Jetter and Kelly Mordecai and Rand Paul and a lot of the different patriots we could mention, if we're going to it, then fine, let's do it right now, because we can then do a lot of things for the good. But if the current state legislatures and the Congress that we have, and that's who's going to be sending the people, how's it going to be any better than what we got now, except it could be in total disaster where they would end the Constitution and force a kind of Second Amendment defense as the only thing left. So,
Jim, it's worse than that. George Soros' groups are actually funding and promoting this Article 5 Convention of States. So,
and Mark Levin's promoting
it
on the other side, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I first heard about the Convention of States, I thought, well, that's a great idea. You know, I did a little bit of research. I'm like, you're making it sound like a bad idea. And then I went to a 10th Amendment conference in Topeka, Kansas, where the Secretary of State of Kansas was the primary speaker, and if you've never heard that guy speak, outstanding guy. He's really doing a great job for Kansas, and he's really doing an outstanding job of ticking off the federal government, and by standing up, you know, by using the 10th Amendment to defend, you know, the state of Kansas. And one thing that he's an architect of, and this is why a constitutional convention or a convention of states is completely unnecessary, and I didn't know this until I went to this conference, and that's it's a little thing called an interstate compact, and I was not familiar with how those worked until after I went there, and they are currently, well, they've authored and have 11 other states, or it's 10 other states, they've got 11 total signed on to this interstate compact to eliminate Obamacare, not defund it, but basically make it null and void and no longer in existence. And what I learned while I was there is that if 34 states sign onto this interstate compact, which is the same amount you need for a CONCON, the only thing that has to happen then to make it the law of the land in all 50 states and all of our territories, or 57 states if you're Obama, the only thing that has to happen at that point for that to become the law of the land is for the House to ratify it. The Senate and the President never put a pen to paper on it. They have no say in it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've actually been trying to promote that idea because it doesn't touch the Constitution, but it still gives the states all the power they need to tell the federal government where to go. And I mean, yeah, they could eliminate entire departments. Let's say they wanted to get rid of, I don't know, just for example, the Department of Education because they don't like Common Core. An interstate compact signed by 34 states, ratified by the House, you no longer have a Department of Education. It's gone. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, the Constitutional Convention, in, you know, if we were in the era of about, 1800, that might be a good thing. And, well, okay, let's go ahead and tweak it a little bit better and make everybody a little bit more free. You know, that would be fantastic. But unfortunately now, the environment that we have in this country is you have people across this country, and it's probably a daily basis where I will get into debates with people about something as simple as free speech. And people have been so, trying to think of what the word is. I mean, it's right there.
Indoctrinated.
Indoctrinated. There you go. Thank you. The other word I was going to use was a lot more harsh.
Brainwashed.
they've been so indoctrinated into this leftist mindset that they think that their version of free speech is the only acceptable version of free speech. And, you know, that's tyrannical thinking, and that's been bored into our heads by this indoctrination by these progressives. And so, no, a constitutional convention at this time,
Jim,
in history?
Both Jims. The thing is, most people's indoctrination is very shallow. It's because the concepts are very shallow. It's not difficult if you break things down into real basics. Do you have the right to say what you want? Yep. If you have the right, doesn't everyone else? End of argument. Nobody can argue that. And as far as what Jim Condit was saying earlier, as far as the leadership of these various groups and the voter fraud, and vote fraud is something we really need to get into, I've been to all kinds of groups, and I seem to have a way of expressing these basic constitutional principles in slightly different basic terms. Libertarians, Tea Parties, disaffected rhinos, disaffected Democrats, bikers, Paulites, button-down AFP types, you know, Americans for Prosperity, the Freedom Works, people who are single-issue people, right to work, Second Amendment, abortion, the NSA, Common Core. The thing is, they listen to the leadership, but don't think that the leadership is leading them. The leadership is coming truly in this patriot movement, this liberty movement, from the grassroots, not the self-appointed leaders, okay? When I say something, if it's not something that they already believe in or I can convince them of, it's not what they're going to follow. It's not what they're going to do. If I want them to follow me, I have to follow them. So I listen really carefully, and the one thing about all of these groups is they are starting to understand, even the disaffected Democrats, even the people within the unions are starting to understand that our basic God-given rights, and even the atheists, forget the word God, I believe in it, they don't have to, that's in our Constitution too, they're understanding that the basic human rights that we have, that were guaranteed in our Constitution, are not going to be guaranteed just because there's a piece of paper or people saying things. It's based on action. And quite frankly, whether it's Jenny Beth Martin, who I've never met, or some of the big wigs, and I've met a few, that's nice, and it's good that we're stepping up and we've got some leaders. But the grassroots people, the ones who are asking halting questions, who aren't really familiar with the language, who haven't read all of the Federalist Papers and Bastiat and all these other things, they still get it. And those are the people, if we follow them, what they want is liberty and the prosperity that it brings. That basic thing. And I recommend to everyone, no matter what your issue, no matter what your group, share events, meet and agree with these people on what you can agree with, and just don't get in the way of what else they want to do, unless it's something bad like this Constitution of States. That's bad, because no. Nobody's following the current Constitution. What do we need to change it for? Why don't we just try following that for a while? Anyway, I'm sorry I butted in, but that just was getting to me.
Let me, go ahead.
Here's how we're going to do that. Real quick, I want to make, in addition here, it's going to be Matt Bevin who's running that I'm going to be looking to interview there for Kentucky. It's Matt Bevin. And so, you know, I haven't had any, I still have to contact them yet. But go ahead, Jim, and then I want to bring in Cindy Todd, our conservative activist, and then we're going to be bringing in some other callers from the audience. So go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, let me try to answer the question that was put to me in 1 minute, because I just got into one of those important issues. Another one, somebody might say, no, we need to make sure we got real seeds, because Monsanto and them are trying to corrupt all the seeds and make them GMOs that they don't reproduce. And there's all kinds of issues, but if I went to Congress and got in, or even if I don't get in, I'm going to be trying to scream from the housetops that we need all the grassroots, all the millions of people, the Paulites, the Tea Party, all the millions of people need to demand three things right now and demand it till we get it and somehow affect it, however we have to affect it. We need to get in the precincts and get millions of people in the precincts. There's only 300,000 precincts, and knock out the Republican and Democratic parties and get in fair elections, because it's at the county that you decide how the votes are counted. That must be done. Then the constitutional libertarians have a chance, and then probably the Republicans would cease to exist. So we got to get in the precincts, knock out the county leaderships. Those are open meetings. They're not secretly counted meetings. You can see how many people are there. You can vote by hand. When we get in each county, we change the election back to honest elections. Then we elect people to the State House and Congress, where we demand there two things, if we would get a majority in Congress, to revitalize the Second Amendment through the organized militias as well under the governor and the county, so we have a legitimate recognized force that can counterbalance a runaway federal government. And that's what the Founding Fathers wanted, and that's what existed until about 1900. And then secondly, get rid of the Fed, put in an honest national monetary office that operated in the open, issued money without interest to the nation, and that was about equal to the goods and services, so that the people could have the lifeblood, the money to conduct business and commerce and you know, buy things for their family. So those are the three issues I would trumpet from the housetop if I got into Congress. And then once you got in guys like they're on this call, and the gal, Cindy, that's about to come in, once you get in guys like us in all these legislators, within about 4 to 6 months we could remedy most of the things that were wrong and repeal a bunch of stuff and put in the few positive steps that would help to, you know, to put us back on track to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as the Founding Fathers envisioned it.
Jim, very briefly before we bring Cindy in, I'd like to mention to our listeners several organizations that they can get practical hands-on how it's done. And they will help, even though they have points of view, they'll help. They're nonpartisan. They'll help anybody. If you're interested in doing it, this is what the progressives did to the Democrat Party. This is what they did to the Republican Party to a large extent. It's what they've done to Wall Street and Main Street and Hollywood and the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts, for God's sakes. Precinct Project, which is very active here in Pennsylvania, American Majority, and the Madison Project. If you go to them and you're looking for basic information, how do I get on a county committee? What does it take? They have it broken down by states, by counties, by precincts, with contact people. And if you're interested, a lot of these groups, especially here in Pennsylvania and some of the eastern states, like Precinct Project, will come out and teach you specifically how these things work, how the system is set up, and what you can do, no matter what your political point of view, to get on these committees. And I'm pleased to say that I have literally dozens and dozens of friends across the state who have been doing just that, and they are now, they've put in their petition signatures yesterday. That was our deadline. They are now running, mostly Democrats and a few mostly Republicans, rather, and a few Democrats for the state committees, the county committees, and the local committees, so that they can remove this false dichotomy of Democrat and Republican when they're really just progressive.
Dan,
well, Dan, I'm really, really impressed. Not that you're doing all this, that you even have friends.
Hey, Dan,
yeah,
for my sake.
Come on, Kelly. I know you're impressed that he's going all these things and not having friends. But going the back.
Yeah.
But real quick,
Dan,
that's okay.
Could you repeat those groups, Dan? Dan, could you repeat those groups for all of our benefit and if they have a website? One is who runs the Precinct Project?
Well, I know the local woman here in Pennsylvania. That's Lois Kanashiki. I'm not sure.
Okay,
I'm not sure who runs these things. And to be honest with you, I don't really care.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, you can learn from the Ron Paul groups how Campaign for Liberty, how to be politically active. It's in a different fashion, but it also works. As a matter of fact, when I was a progressive, much younger man than I am now, I went to leadership conferences where it was straight Alinsky stuff. And you know what? With the difference of being honest, other than that, it works. There are specific things that work in politics, and there are specific rules that govern the American system of politics that work no matter whether you're a single-issue person who wants to save feral cats, or whether you're somebody who wants to work on a multitude of issues. But if you're for liberty, don't just sit there and complain. Don't just write letters and sign petitions. Find candidates. Maybe you are a candidate. You don't even know it yet. Find candidates. Get on the ballot. Give the voters a choice in the general election by making certain that they have a choice in the primary and that decent people get on that ballot.
Dan, Lois Kanashiki, she actually got started in Precinct from a video I did called
Do you know
Strange...
her?
Yeah,
she's awesome.
Yeah, she is. The Strangest Political Secret is a video that you can search on the internet. It's called The Strangest Political Secret. It's about Precinct,
mm-hmm.
and it's at wagthedog2010.com. But Lois is she's just a tremendous force there. And who were the other groups then besides Campaign for Liberty? You said James Madison Group?
It's the Madison Project.
All right.
And American Majority.
Okay.
Now, Madison Project and American Majority are avowedly conservative in their philosophical viewpoint, but to maintain their nonpartisan, nonprofit status, and because they're honest people, if
yeah.
you come to them and you tell them that you're a Green Party person who believes in global warming,
yeah.
They will teach you the same things, and good luck to you. Now, personally, after this winter, and we've got freezing rain outside right now, it just dropped 45 degrees, the first person who says one word to me about global warming, I'm going to punch him in the throat.
And with that,
all
folks,
I know
I'm going to go ahead, since it's starting to get a little violent here. I'm just kidding, Dan. There's a lot of adjusting going on right now. Before I bring Cindy in, it's going to be just real quick, is that I may have to interrupt folks later because I just got finished chatting with the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party, Randy Stoffelbeam, and he may be calling in before the top of the hour, and I'd like to bring him in, so hopefully he'll be able to come in and join us tonight. But also, we see that it is at the bottom of the hour, and only 30 minutes left of live time, actually a little bit less than that. So if anyone wants to call in and join us, and you'll need to call in and be able to join us if you don't call in for the top of the hour to join us for our extended version, call in at 347-945-7428, whether you would just like to listen in or if you'd like to participate in our roundtable discussion as well. And again, you have to do that by the stroke of midnight Eastern time, because if not, unfortunately, you will be unable to call in. But of course, the archive, which will be available right after the show, where you'll be able to hear the last hour, the show will be available to listen and, of course, to share. And hopefully we'll hear from Randy within, he's able to call in within the next 28 minutes. So with this, I will be opening up our mic with Cindy Todd. Thank you very much, Cindy, for calling into the show. How are you? And then in about 10 minutes, we'll bring in some audience members. Go ahead.
Well, I'm doing just fine. How's everybody else doing tonight?
Cold.
Good.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We had 85 degrees today, so
I'll rub it in.
I can't feel anything for you, but anyway, Mr. Jim Condit, wow. If you Google your name, do you know what kind of controversy you come up with?
Oh, I know. In fact, I went to the Constitution Party of Ohio, and I said, here's when I talked to him. Now, in 2010, I got on without, I don't even know if the Ohio Party was half as developed as it is now, so I just got the signatures and ran. But I said, now look, if you don't want to endorse me, I won't blame you, because I've gotten in all kinds of there's a website up against me which I'm, by a court order from Minnesota, I'm forbidden to answer right now. We're about to sue this guy and maybe sue the judges. And this website, this guy bought my name, jimcondajr.com, and he's got everything you can imagine. I said if I looked at that site and didn't know myself, I would say, wow, if there's this much smoke, there's got to be some fire. That's
no,
how I would.
If there was any real fire, you would have been in prison long ago.
I read
some of those sites, and I was going
to
ask some questions until I did a little digging myself.
Yeah.
I have seen absolutely, and I have training as an investigator and a journalist, I have seen zero verification on any of those scurrilous charges. And I say scurrilous because they are, if these people aren't lying, they're incredibly misguided. If there's smoke, it means somebody's saying something. If there was actual evidence to this, I would be happy to hard question you, but
well, you
I don't
can,
see
and you can do that now or any other time, although I don't think we want to avert tonight. But I told the Constitution Party of Ohio I would get on a call and let them, if they wanted to have a five-hour call of pattering me, I'll answer. But let me just say real quickly, because Cindy brought it up, One, I've never threatened anybody with violence. This deranged fellow in Minnesota says, I'm going to come up there and beat up his one-year-old son, if you look at JimKondaJr.com. This is why we finally have to sue this guy to try to get all this stuff. I've never been part of a white supremacist organization, nor have I ever been in a white supremacist meeting. I believe I'm a Christian. I'm a pre-Vatican II Catholic. I go to the Latin Mass. I believe God created every person with a soul of infinite value. None of us pick the race that we are, and we should love all of our fellow human beings. I have never been in support of pedophilia, which he accuses me of for some convoluted reason. I've never been a spokesman for the Masons. In fact, I'm probably the only person in candidate in the last 50 years that has challenged the influence of the Masons on government. That was back in the early 80s. But he calls me a pro-Masonic agent. So now what is true about me, though, I do want to say one thing real quick, because of what is true, and this is a problem for a lot of people. I have clashed, and you know, Howard Phillips, the founder of this party, the Constitution Party, was of Jewish descent. He converted to be a Christian, but he was of Jewish descent. In 1996 and in 2000, I coordinated the signature campaigns. It took 5,000 valid signatures in Ohio to get him on the ballot for president in 1996 and 2000, and I'm the only person in the history of Ohio that has coordinated two signature campaigns to get a person of Jewish descent on the ballot for president. I work with the Collier brothers who were Jewish. They were wrote the vote scam, The Stealing of America. Chapter 12 of their book is called Strange Bedfellows because it's about when they came to help us in Cincinnati. They were left-wing Jewish guys who loved sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the 60s. I was a geeky Catholic who hardly could talk to girls when I was 20, you know, so that's why they called us Strange Bedfellows, because we had opposite views on many other things. But I have clashed with the AIPAC, the American Israeli Political Action Committee, and their influence in Congress over the years. I also put out a very controversial video at the request of several MDs who are in practice and couldn't do it themselves, called The Final Solution to Adolf Hitler, which is an anti-Hitler video. But I would contend and would be glad to come back another time or on any show to discuss that the hidden Hitler had a specific job to do during World War II. He was funded by the banking establishment I was talking about earlier, and his job was to round up the Jews of Europe and get as many of them as possible down to Palestine. Now, there were other things regarding World War II.
Let
me just finish one thing. So, to Cindy, there is some controversial things I have been involved with, but I would contend that information is not anti-Semitic, but I won't filibuster any more on this. But anyway,
well, listen,
go ahead. Dan,
I just want to – I have to chime in real briefly. I'm Jewish.
Real quick,
and
go ahead, Cindy. Real quick, Dan.
Quickly.
It'll be you, Dan, and then Cindy. I missed some of it because I was talking to another caller who's going to be on
Understood.
The line. So I kind of missed what the question was. So maybe we can
very quickly, as far as being – pro or anti another country, which is Israel, that doesn't make you anti-Semitic. I happen to think that I'm not too fond of the Israeli government, but it is the only functioning democracy that actually locks up their leaders when they're convicted of crimes and they are actually given a trial, and it's done that more than once. And again, this is just to very briefly, this experience in my family, if Hitler's job was to get Jews to Palestine, he did a pretty poor job, because between 300 and 400 of my relatives, my cousins, my great-grandparents, they're dead, and two lived out of all the people in Europe, and only one of them made to Palestine, so that's pretty damn inefficient. Not to say that Hitler didn't do an awesome job of not only killing Jews, but Gypsies and Catholics and clergymen and just about 100 million Russians, about everybody he could. But go ahead, Cindy.
Yeah, and they didn't care how many Jews died, that's for sure. Yeah,
they killed
a lot of them, yeah.
I saw that junk too. I saw that garbage too. But what I was impressed with, because I love to see the controversy that you're coming up with, and I'm proud of you for it. Specifically, I'm very pleased with your proactive work against abortion. Thank you for that, because that is, as a Christian, my number one issue. And I see that you get more. There is more. The reason they come after you with all those other false lies and other garbage is because you stand strong in these issues, the abortion issue, the voting rights issue. Those are the things that are getting you into trouble, and I'm glad to see it.
Well, thank you for looking at it from that angle.
Well,
I hope that is the case, Jim.
I'd actually like to throw a quip in real quick, and I know we're getting close to taking in calls, but Jim, I understand entirely from firsthand experience what you're going through with these people attacking you. There's actually a group out there called Americans Against the Tea Party, and they've accused me of embezzlement. And, of course, when you challenge them to say, well, what proof do you have, their answer is, well, you're very good at hiding it. This is my favorite one, though, because it was insanity that was entertaining. I was accused by a woman in New Jersey of being a Democrat, Black Panther, Muslim, Nazi, Zionist, Jew.
All those things
well,
at
that
once?
Just doesn't make sense.
I'm amazed I just haven't exploded and killed myself. But
you're a talented man. I didn't know if anyone could hold all those.
Now,
by the way, did she say you were schizophrenic by any chance?
His real name is Sybil.
And this is Jim Condit again. Let me just clarify one other thing on this thing, because it is a very sensitive issue. I believe that if the powers that be get what they want, there's going to be a horrible war eventually in the Middle East, and half the people or one-third of the people in Israel will be killed, a lot of Arabs will be killed. I'm trying to prevent any future bloodshed over there or anywhere else.
That's a great thing.
And, you know, Ralph Nader told Pat Buchanan in an article in American Conservative in 2004, 300,000 people in Israel that previous month or whatever in 2004 went out to protest the Likud government and some of its policies. So do we ever hear about that in America, that there's disagreement in Israel over how – no, you never hear about that. And
you don't hear about anything in the American press that's true.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
well,
so I just want to make that clear. That I'm not, because the next thing somebody will say if you criticize maybe something Netanyahu did, they'll say, well, do you want to push all the Jews into the ocean? No, we're trying to prevent future bloodshed, for heaven's sakes, in the Constitution Party.
And speaking of the Constitution Party, real quick, Cindy, is I do want to bring someone in, and they are a member of the Constitution Party and work for the Constitution Party, and that is, I believe, Casey. Did I pronounce that right?
Carice. Yeah, my name is
Carice. I'm
how
sorry.
You
dropped the call and then call back in, so I had to do the name by memory.
No, that I still didn't
get it. Thing right there, so sorry, Carice.
No problem. I actually am the social media content creator for the Constituting Party Utah page, and also I am the youth coordinator, so you know, I've helped them do events for the Constitution Party here in Utah. I know Frank Flukiger, you know, we connected many times. Anyway, I just have to say that about the voter fraud, because you guys were talking about that a little bit, so I kind of wanted to touch on that. It is one of the more troubling problems with America, and I feel like that is, and I do agree in a lot of ways, that is one of the first steps to try to range in some of this unbridled and horrible corruption that's going on in America right now. The problem is that we don't address it enough, everyone, all parties. Liberal influences, my party's influences, Republican, whatever. There was an interesting article wrote in Western Journalism about how in April the American Civil Rights Union, a conservative legal group, sued Wauhaw County for having 124% more registered voters than voting age eligible residents based on the U.S. Census data. So just with that alone, I mean, that's just one of many examples of like the problem with voter fraud in the United States of America and how we do need voter IDs. I don't care what they say about, oh, it's racist. I mean, that's people who say it's racist. I'm a Black man, and if I have to show an ID to buy liquor, if I have to have a driver's license to drive a car, then what is the problem with me having one to vote?
It's racist to insinuate that somebody who has more melanin content in their skin, because that's about the only difference between us, is just skin color.
Yeah.
Is not smart enough to get an ID. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. It's like what Stalin told Lenin after the first vote that put the communists in power in Russia. It's not who votes that counts, it's who counts the votes. And that's how you end up with 108%, like you're saying, or in some of the neighborhoods in Philadelphia, over 108% turnout with 100% voting for just one candidate. That never happens. There's always somebody. I live in a small town and work in a medium-sized city, and there's not a single block that doesn't have somebody who gets in that voting booth and just goes, the heck with all of them, I'm voting the other way.
Yeah,
where are those people? Their votes need to be counted, too.
Right, and well said out there in Colorado.
He's in Utah.
I'm sorry, out there in Utah.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'm actually originally from California, liberal, and I ran like heck as soon as I got old enough. I couldn't tolerate it. I'm very happy to be in Utah. My family's very happy to be in Utah. But aside from that, it's just a troubling thing. That how I feel like aside from our economy is the direct threat of them wrangling our military to World War II size, and then the increasing of the Department of Homeland Security, and then the president and his administration decided that the Posse-Comitatus Act of 1878 was something that wasn't necessary, which was a protection of using the military on American citizens throughout Vietnam, World War I and II. Those are protections that that's an egregious constitutional violation, in my opinion.
You know what? Yeah. I hear in the background, Carice, something that I want to just bring our listeners' attention to. The reason that we're fighting, obviously none of us are willing to live as slaves, and we may go down fighting or we may be able to succeed, but there's somebody more important than that, and I hear a little one there. And that's who we're fighting for, whether we have children ourselves, whether we have grandchildren, whether they're somebody else's children. Every single American child deserves to grow up in a world where, in an America, because we are the last hope of the world, where they have the chance to do what they will with their lives, whether it's making money and going to school, or whether it's working a trade, or whether it's being a starving artist, or whatever it is, whether they succeed, whether they fail, they deserve that chance. They don't need elites in Washington, D.C., or in The Hague in Netherlands, or wherever the heck the trilateral are meeting to decide, well, we have enough of this, so this is what you're going to do with your life, and you're going to just give everything you've got, and we'll give you what we think that you need. Mm-hmm. Let our children be free.
Exactly.
And real quick, gentlemen, we will get back to this, but I believe we may have cut Cindy off a little early, so I want to bring it back to you, Cindy. I know you had a question, and then after that, we'll go ahead and continue this, and then we'll bring it to you, James, and then back to you, Kelly, because we'd like to talk a little bit about the constitutional challenge. So go ahead, Cindy.
Okay, well, I have two questions. One's about quantitative easing, and the other one is about the voter fraud stuff. But anyway, I just think it's amazing how, as a 19-year-old, you were able to discern the sinister duopoly even then. I only just got here in my early 50s to where I'm understanding it. So I really congratulate you on that.
Well, again, I don't take credit for that, but I was kind of walking down the path of trying to figure out what's going on. But As an alternate delegate, somebody sent all of us two books. I don't know if you can even still get the list today, but they sent all the delegates and alternates two books. One was Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude by W. Clement Stone, which is a fine book on setting goals and trying to find the positive thread as you're trying to reach goals. The other one was None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen. And I read that book, not all of it, I don't think, right before I went to the Nixon convention. And when he said that the CFR and the Trilateral Commission, maybe it was just the CFR then, controlled all three networks, that their personnel controlled all three, ABC, CBS, and NBC, a light bulb went on in my head, which occasionally, a few times has happened in my life, where you get this light bulb moment, and I said, wow, if the same people control all three networks, maybe they're not telling us everything. And that's when I started investigating. And Cindy, I want to say one other thing to you. And, yeah, we got to get the voter fraud fixed. But and there's so many issues. We could talk about many of the sentences that have been said in these 2 hours, and you got a great crew here, Robert, for
well,
an hour.
You.
But I want to say one thing about what you said. I also believe that the abortion issue, the killing of unborn babies, not only up to 9 months, but now sometimes when they're surviving an abortion, and Obama lobbied in Illinois and the baby that survived an abortion could be killed, I believe that that issue is the most important issue, because if America doesn't spiritually straighten out, and I think this is kind of in the Constitution Party platform too, we cannot win without spiritually be straightened out, and I'm speaking first to myself here because I'm not talking down to anybody, and God will not bless America truly again unless we spiritually are straightened out. So I just wanted to affirm what your position on that is.
You're right. You're exactly right, because it won't matter if we do come up with the right solutions for all of this stuff. None of it's going to work as long as we're killing millions of babies a year. So
yeah,
anyway,
and quantitative easing. Quantitative easing.
Yeah.
I would urge everyone.
You've got Britain and Japan and other EU countries and the United States especially. We were all very strong financial machines who have recently begun to monetize our debts because we just allowed this huge bubble and then it burst. This is a monumental disaster for the middle class of all these countries, especially ours. However, I know a couple of very, very, very wealthy Republicans who think that this is our only solution to pay our debt, and that's the reason they're supporting RINOs in these elections, because they think the RINOs will leave the Fed alone and let them keep printing money, and that's what they think they need to do. I don't know if you've seen the documentary, All Wars Are Bankers' Wars.
No.
What is your philosophy about that, and what do you think we can do about our unsustainable debt?
Yeah, okay, real quick, I'm going to have to give a quick answer, because, again, this is another hour, 2 hour, we could do that on that. But number one, I believe the financial, we are living in the age of plenty. We are living with more physical goods and more ability to produce physical goods than ever before. There's 6,000 patents being kept secret in the patent office. I believe most of those are energy inventions, not new improvements to the can opener. They wouldn't be classified for national security. I'm talking about electric cars, which Elon Musk is trying to pioneer right now with Tesla Motors and a bunch of other stuff. So we have to bring the issue of money in line with the age of plenty, or the plenitude of goods that we have. Now, I want to urge three things real quick. There's an article on the Internet called The Money Myth Exploded. There's a book on the Internet for free called This Age of Plenty. And I would urge people to look at those two books. Now, you combine that with the gold-silver standard, because we can now put the gold strands in our money, and I think you have the solution. But the high interest rates, the theft of $17 trillion by the top bankers from this country, all of that is they're skimming the cream off the top. We got to issue money based on the goods and services that are available, because ultimately money is a ticket for goods and services, for gas, for food, for all that. It's not just gold and silver. That's two of the products, and that's two products that have worked well in backing up money when paper money crashes. But a money is ultimately a ticket for goods and services, food, computers, clothes, all the cars, all the things that we use to live. And that money has to be brought into line with the reality of all the goods and services that we could produce to distribute mankind and rise, even the people at the lowest rungs up to be middle class all over the world, not just in America. So that's a shorthand answer, and it probably doesn't totally hit on every point you wanted to bring up, but that's my shorthand answer to that.
Well, what about
the fact, Cindy,
that Russia and China are trying to buy petrol without American dollars now? What do you think that will do to the American dollar?
You're talking. Well, you said what happened?
Real quick, Jim. Sorry, folks. Before you answer, I do want to just let folks know who are listening on the listening in that there's only about 6 minutes left of live time. And so what we're going to need to do is go ahead and let folks know, if you'd like to listen to the extended version, please call in at 347-945-7428. Because if you do not, then the show will close out and won't be able to hear anything from there. But, of course, the archive will be available
immediately after the show for you listen to the extended version and to, of course, share with other folks. But for those who would not be able to stay with us listening in after the top of the hour, thank you very much for coming to the show tonight. And please, yes, share it out with all the folks so they can get some, you know, hear from all the wonderful folks we have on here tonight. And check out the Patriot Journalist Network at www.patriotjournalist.com, as well as check out the website for the show at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And please consider checking out the Give page, where we have some great, wonderful organizations on there that could need your help, including some conservative organizations and charities. So thank you very much for coming to the show, and you have a good night. And we may be having a show this Friday, something that's starting to come up. I was at, as I mentioned earlier, a Tea Party meeting on Monday, and I have some audio. It's about an hour-long meeting, and I have the audio from there. I just need to check the quality and things of that nature to see if it's going to be show-worthy. But if so, we will be having a show on Friday night to listen to and discuss that. And the meeting was surrounding, it was Congressman Winstrup was there, and they were discussing Benghazi and Obamacare. So we'll be looking into doing that. So check your Facebook or Twitter for information on, we end up doing a Friday night show this Friday evening at the same time at 10 p.m. So thank you very much for letting me chime in there, Cindy. And Jim, for interruptions, again, folks, you'd like to call in, you only get about 5 more minutes left at 347-945-7428. Go ahead, Jim.
Robert, I'm gonna answer briefly, then call in on my cell phone because I got to drive because we got a sick family friend that I have to go relieve somebody on for a few hours. But I'm gonna call. No, that's okay. It's not life or death. I'm gonna call in just to listen until I have to part when I get out there, and I'll listen in the car. But sure. I'm sorry, I did not hear Cindy's last question about Russia and China. Can you say it again, Cindy, real quick?
Okay. Well, Russia, they're saying. I mean, this is just the kind of scuttlebutt going around that Russia may use this incident in Ukraine to get mad enough at the United States that, you know, they're going to start using other dollars other than the U.S. dollars for buying petrol. And China has supposedly got some big announcement that's going to embarrass the heck out of us in April. Okay, and if that happens to be that they're going to start buying petrol and some other dollars too, that sounds like something that could be really devastating for our dollar. What do you think that would do to
Howard,
both of us?
Okay. I'm sorry, but I hate to interrupt again. But if you don't call in with on your cell phone, Jim, in the next 4 minutes, you will not be able to call in.
I'm dialing right now.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate it. I just don't want you to try calling in and us not be able to get you because, unfortunately, at the top of the hour, the system won't allow any more new callers. That's why I wanted to chime in and do that before we.
I just got through in the queue. So here's the thing, Cindy. Howard Phillips himself, the founder of the Constitution Party, told me in the 90s, I didn't understand it, if the United States ever ceases to be, if the dollar ever ceases to be the reserve currency, we're in real trouble. Now, that's under the current Bretton Woods IMF Fed system. I still believe the system I recommended that you read about in This Age of Plenty, the book by Louis Even, we could reconstitute it and help all the countries. It's just this interest-heavy system that we have. The most charitable thing I can say about it, what the Fed and the IMF are doing, it's 100 years out of date ever since Henry Ford introduced mass production. It's just 100 years out of date. We got it updated, even if we imputed all good motives to the Fed and the IMF, which I do not. So, okay, that's the end of my answer for now.
Well, I want to just mention one thing if we're going to talk numbers. Bob, I just looked at the Alexa rating for your site. Do you realize that your show is number 715 in the United States right now? I mean, that doesn't sound like a very high number, but when you consider that it's an internet podcast, you're number 715. That's not just conservative sites. You should be on the top 100 conservative sites by now.
Wow, that's great. I did not know that.
I did not hear it. I just thought I'd look while I'm listening because I'm always multitasking, and I'm astounded, not because of the quality. I mean, you put on a good show, and you've got great visitors and guests and panelists, but wow.
Yeah, send me that link. I'd be interested in seeing that. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'll copy and paste it over to your Facebook right now. But it's your show, so what's the next step?
Well, great. Well, we have entered into, well, about a minute, we are going to be entering into the extended version, and we have more callers here. So what I'll do is I'm going to bring in the next caller, and I believe this is our good friend Harriet, and then I do see someone with the area code 801 that may want to chime in. We'll see.
The 801 area code is me. I just wanted to tell you that. Just in case my phone lost connection. So don't worry about the 801.
Okay.
So don't worry about the 801.
Oh, okay. Well, then we look like we've got Harriet on the line. Thank you very much, Harriet.
Well, I didn't intend to. I called in, but I didn't intend to sign in.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was being presumptuous.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that.
I'm enjoying everything and the education, and hi, everyone. And
Harriet.
Nothing more to add. I'm waiting for my op-ed to be published as soon as I can get my bio over to the publisher, so that'll be the news one day.
Harriet, that's only your first article. I'm expecting much more from you.
Oh, really? Well,
oh, yeah.
Well, we'll have to promote a couple more, huh?
You'll have to write a couple more.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
I'll have to continue to research and gather the evidence.
That's the best thing about it, Harriet, is when you write it, it's not just good writing, it's good research. People can count on it being true.
Yes. That's very, very true. And I'm happy for the election here in Florida, and I think that that's a great step forward. Because,
would you tell us about that election?
Well, I can tell you the little bit that I do know, and that's and Cindy, you can contradict me if you want, because I think Cindy probably knows more about it than I do. But from what I read and I heard, and of course I am in the REC party down here, and our party went there to the district and did a lot of walking and campaigning and supporting this candidate, because it was very, very crucial to the voting in America. Pelosi and the Democrats, from what I understand, have been down here in Florida for months campaigning, flooding with negative ads, flooding with money, and we were very, very worried. So thankfully, with work and effort and the help of God and everything, Mr. Jolly made it through. Now, he's only going to be in office until November, and then I guess he goes up for re-election again. So we cannot rest on our laurels. We just, because this is a very big voting district, and Obama won this district twice. And the Democrats wanted to take this district no matter what. So that's how
Harriet.
Yes.
Well, the only reason I said what I said, I made the just so everybody knows, the comment I made to Harriet was, that is good news if he does what he says he was going to do and is who he says he is, because being from that particular county, they tend to be ruled by rhinos, and you know, it's like what Mr. Condit was saying earlier. People go into Congress with good intentions, and then they find out that the arm twisting that goes on in there is it's really hard to run up against and do anything with. So that's the only reason I said what I said. I'm not going to contradict you. I think it's a good thing that we got him in there. It's like a breath of you know, it's like breathing out, a sigh of relief.
Yeah, and you know, Cindy, I think we're going to have to watch this very closely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can let this get out of sight, because like you say, anything is possible. Our GOP here in Ocala is very, very tuned in, getting rid of the rhinos any way we can, and we're watching. but I hope we don't miss too many.
Well, you know, Harriet, that you're absolutely right that we can't let anybody have a pass. Everybody has to be vetted, like you do, and everybody has to be continually vetted. Had we simply voted out 1 in 20 incumbents over these years, had we kept our eye on the ball, had we gotten rid of the worst of the bad apples, we would not be in this place right now. There's never a time to rest on our laurels. And even, you know, God willing, if we got the vast majority of the House, the Congress, all the state houses and state senates, every governorship, and things were going great, I guarantee you that the people who want to be elites, the people who want to be kings, would immediately begin working on their campaign to subvert us, and if we let them, they'd do it again.
That's right. That's right. And I'm glad that I'm in the group on Facebook where the administrator and the group leaders and everyone are allowing us to vet these candidates to the degree that she's allowing us.
That's where Liberty Dwells on Facebook.
Yes.
It's an excellent group.
She is terrific. They are, I mean, those administrators are terrific. And, I mean, I just can't thank them enough for what they're allowing me to do.
They're grateful for the all of the contributors. And anybody out there who thinks that you can't do something, listen, most of us, we're not leaders. And I'm not calling myself a leader at this point. But what we were is just fed up and watching it and despairing and what were we going to do? What can anyone do? And we realized we can do something. Now, I'm not good at everything. Harriet's not good at everything. Cindy's not good at everything. James and Robert aren't good at everything. We're good at some things, and every one of you is good at something. And if you'll do that thing that you're good at in behalf of liberty, then we have a chance to win. And if you're just going to sit back and let these leaders who appoint themselves on a national basis tell you what to do and you'll sign your little petition, it's great, but don't expect you to get change in that matters. I mean, what Obama's campaign Organizing for America said is actually true. We are the change that we're waiting for.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
I just wanted to follow up on your
line too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on your comment about laurels. We can't rest on our laurels. That's because there's an awful lot of laurels in the Republican Party. There's an awful lot of hardies in the Democratic Party, and thus we understand what our two main political parties are, Laurel and Hardy. They have turned...
here in Pennsylvania, we have the Keystone Cops.
Okay, these two comedians have turned the three branches of government into Larry, Moe, and Curly. So anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about, I'd like to quiz Jim, actually, on the Constitutional Challenge, just a few questions. But I also want to tell you
news. Kelly, real quick, we have plenty of time. We still have about 45 minutes, and I believe we have Jim back on the line. And I did say I wanted to do the talk a little bit about and have a couple of questions on the Constitutional Challenge, but I don't know if we got we're able to get much of a money answer from Jim from Cindy's last question. And then I do want to see if Carissa would like to chime in, and then we'll go to the Constitutional Challenge. So first, Cindy, did he answer all that for you?
We're told that they keep trying.
I think to the extent that he could in this forum, yeah. I mean,
okay.
It's such a complicated issue. Like he said, we could talk for the next 2 hours just on that. So, and there's differing. I mean, it's just so multifaceted, you know, this whole – That's why it's so hard to get the regular public involved in fighting for this issue about, you know, the economic things that are going on in the background, because number one, they keep a lot of it secret from us, and number two, it's so complicated that most people can't understand it anyway. So it's really hard to get them on your side and use words and phrases that they will be sure to understand, you know, and understand concepts that are hurting us. So anyway, he answered my question as much as he could in this report.
Robert, can you hear me or am I not alive?
We hear you.
No, I hear you.
Okay, let me just say one other thing about the money thing, although, again, this might kind of make some people on the line think, well, where in the heck is he coming from? But this is a big issue. It needs a lot of discussion. But if right now, because the only thing I can remember that I heard Obama say that I thought was right was that he said a lot of these jobs have been lost to technology and they're never coming back. And I agree with that. And the system of thinking I'm promoting, the fellow that started it, it was a British guy named C.H. Douglas he published in 1918. And he said, we're losing jobs to technology. What's going to happen when we only need two-thirds of the workforce? What's going to happen when we only need one-third of the workforce? And some people now tell me we only need one-third of the workforce. When Romney said the 47% aren't going to vote for me, I think he was a little bit off because you got Social Security in there, which people have paid for and are giving back some of what they paid or more, maybe more than what they paid. But this, I've asked, you know, my fellow conservatives this question. If we know that 47% roughly are getting either welfare checks, unemployment checks, and many of those people are looking for jobs, that's for the vast majority, and the Social Security checks, all the 47% roughly are getting checks for doing nothing. If that's the case, how is it that we haven't collapsed yet? And the answer is because as long as society can provide food, clothing, transportation, and television and computers to amuse people or let them learn, then it can survive. And so this is what this how money is issued to be into this new crazy reality. The problem is we have too much wealth. So there's a certain sense in which what the Fed is calling quantitative easing, which is a new term, there's a certain sense that we have to issue enough money to equal the goods and services so people don't starve to death in an era where the machines and the computers, for heaven's sakes, are taking over more and more jobs. So I'm not for letting the 47% that can't find jobs starve. So there's a certain element in which this quantitative easing is correct, but then the fact that they're issuing the money to the nation at interest is fatal, fatal. No nation should ever pay interest to private companies, even ones that have been legally delegated, like the Federal Reserve was legally delegated 101 years ago by Congress to handle our money. They didn't come in and just steal taking the money. They were legally delegated. But even illegally, it's insane to let our country be charged interest on our own money by a private organization, and that's one of the problems we have. But anyway, so it's a little more complicated, I believe, than what the Austrian economics people say. And Robert, if you could ever get on a good, you know, knowledgeable Austrian economic spokesman like Tom Woods or someone maybe that's not as well known but that is knowledgeable, I would love to debate him on this, and I might learn something. But I don't think Austrian economics is up to speed with mass production and the amount of riches that we can now produce in the world.
Well, yeah, I just wrote that down, take notes. I'll see if I can – you said Tom Woods?
Tom Woods is a famous and a very honest, decent fellow who's been promoting nullification of the states. He's the brains, I think, behind a lot of the nullification movement. So he's maybe too big of a guy to get, maybe, but maybe he could recommend, or one of the Austrian people could recommend somebody, because I really think this is something that the whole conservative movement should at least be thinking about.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
We need free enterprise, right? I'm all for free enterprise.
Hey, Carissa, I know I want to bring you in, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, my position on a lot of the things that you guys are talking about, especially like Austrian economics and quantitative easing and the Fed and all these various ideals is, I mean, yes, a private entity owning our money is definitely not in the ideal of the United States of America. It definitely is, to me, I mean, I don't even understand how the Federal Reserve exists when our Constitution grants us pretty much debt-free money. So I mean, just the fact that constitutional tender and the constitutional idea of the constitutional tender would be more solidify our nation more than anything the Federal Reserve can do. The IRS, I mean, we could go on days and days about what their problems are. And what troubles me the most is our current administration position on political descendants. I mean, we had Denise D'Souza put in jail on felonious charges. We every day more and more we're learning that Lois Lerner was more complicit in these actions of going after these Tea Partiers and all these conservative groups. The more we let anyone be targeted on either side of the aisle, it destroys the foundations of what our nation was founded upon. Because, I mean, to me, everyone in Congress, everyone in our Senate, all these guys, these are privateers. We got these people pushing the TPP, and we don't talk about that enough either. I talk about the TPP constantly to people in Utah and how it threatens our sovereignty, how we got people saying that, hey, we could take chicken and send it overseas to China for it to be cleaned and then send it back, when they know that the Chinese and their procedures of cleaning their chicken has been deadly, deadly. So, I mean, we have, to me, a lot of problems, but what it boils down to is that the American people, and outside of the brainwashing that happens to me, in my opinion, in America, outside of the people who are brainwashed or convinced that conservatives are the enemy or liberals are the enemy, we have an administration and previous administrations that have expanded their executive branch to the point that Obama has 134 secret wars going on since 2013. I mean, is this the America that our forefathers would have wanted? I mean, you talk about, to me, the Democratic and the Republican influences. I feel like, honestly, the Constitution Party, the reason why I joined it was because I was tired of the establishment. I was tired of looking at two parties that have been, to me, in my opinion, the same since the time of our forefathers. I think America does fundamentally need to remove the Democratic and Republican parties from interest, or at least get liberty-minded candidates. I mean, just that alone, stand alone, would help America and help its interests. Because our sovereignty, to me, in my opinion, is the most crucial and critical thing that's at stake currently in American policy. And our foreign policy is not guaranteeing our security, which is guaranteed within the Constitution. So, I mean, and we won't even get into fine staring and her hypocrisy about being angry about documents and a possible whistleblower putting documents on their computer. Whistleblowers are protected. We see this in America. Bradley Manning, not protected. Snowden, not protected. As Americans, are we going to step up to the plate and say, if we don't keep liberty and sovereignty in mind, our nation will crumble? I mean, that's just where I'm at, especially with a lot of stuff that you guys are talking about currently right now.
100% with you.
And Jim, would you like to comment on that before we bring Kelly in to talk more about the constitutional challenge?
No, I'm driving, so I was a little trouble hearing, but I believe that I agreed with everything that the gentleman said. I'm bad on names sometimes. I couldn't remember his first name, but I thought he stated it well. Now, I'm unfortunately going to have to probably cut off here in about 10 minutes because I'm going to be at this place. But at any rate, I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate all the comments of everybody throughout the night.
Okay, well, we appreciate you coming on. Since you only got about 10 minutes, what we'll do, and this is how we usually do at the end of the night with the guests, is since you have to step out, we have more time where we could discuss other issues here on the show, is we'll give you the last, you know, 5 or so minutes where you can make some, you know, or until you get there, parting comments with us. We appreciate it, and thank you very much for coming on the show and spending as much time with us as you have tonight.
I just would mention that if Let Freedom Ring 2014.com goes to my website, Not necessarily appealing to the people on the call here because you all got your own issues, but if this gets archived and people listen to it, they want to help me put on some educational radio commercials. Believe me, my commercials do not say, "Hi, I'm Jim Condit Jr., and I'm a nice guy, and I'm for apple pie." No, I pick an issue, and we really educate about it in each commercial, and then we drive people to websites to hopefully open up a whole new world of information to them. So if anybody wants to help us put on commercials that might hear this in archive, then they can go to letfreedomring2014.com. And I really think you've given me a chance to say so much during the program that I don't need to have any closing words. So if you just want to move on with the next portion and give others a chance to talk, then I'll listen for about 10 more minutes and unless somebody calls on me. And then I'll hang up and wish you all a good night, okay?
Jim, it was a pleasure meeting you. I hope we do that in person one day. And if I do hit the lottery, I'll be happy to fund those. You mentioned that earlier. I'll be happy to fund those informational commercials.
Well, it sounds like you need to become a candidate yourself, Dan. So I really would prefer to be a background person. You were talking about talents. I wish I looked and sounded like John Kennedy or Mel Gibson, but I don't. I only have done this because so few people seem to be stepping up, but I would much prefer to be a background strategy person than be a candidate. So we need you and other younger people to also, you know, either get in or bring forth other candidates all over the country in every media market so we can at least let the American people, the millions of people in the Tea Party and the Ron Paul movement and all that kind of thing, know what to do and how to take over the precincts. And say hi to Lois if you run into her for me.
I will.
Okay? Yeah.
All right. Hey, Kelly, I want to do a few questions on the constitutional challenge for Jim. All right. So
this may be my most embarrassing moments of the evening, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, first question. All right. First Amendment talks about, here's the question. The exact phrase, true or false, the exact phrase, separation of church and state, is found in the First Amendment, true or false?
False. That
You're
was,
correct.
I think, in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote. And while in a country where, I mean, as I said earlier, I'm a Latin Mass Catholic, which means an old troglodyte-type Catholic, but in a country where you don't have a consensus of religion, which we don't, okay, you can't have a state religion. Now, the 13 states all had state religions when the country founded. Maryland was Catholic, I remember, and the Massachusetts was Puritan. But in a country we have now, you don't have a consensus of religion, so you can't possibly have a state church. On the other hand, the idea that morality should be kept out of the public square, you know, if one wants to advocate for the Ten Commandments or one's own morality, this is an absurd statement. And often the left seems to be saying, don't bring anything up if we disagree. You know,
that's some really good you're correct. The exact phrase, separation of church and state, that is not in the First Amendment. That's 5 points, and then you would get 5 points
totally,
for some of the history.
I'm not totally filibustering just to prevent you from asking me tougher questions, but go ahead.
Okay, Jim. All right.
And he says he's not a politician.
All right, let's go to the Second Amendment, okay?
Real quick, I got to get this out before he's got to go because I know I want to get this to you. To Jim, is I'll be giving you a call tomorrow night about the possibility of us meeting up on Friday night if we can still do that. Okay?
Oh, that'd be fine. Yeah, that'd be fine. Sure.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Go ahead, Kelly.
All right. Second Amendment question. All right. Multiple choice. Is it A, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed? B, the sheriff with a posse and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed? Or C, a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Is it A, B, or C?
And that would be C. And the idea was that in fact, when the country started, the militias were underneath some local authority and under the governor, And that lasted about 1900, as I said. And the group that's called Revitalizing the Second Amendment, if you Google that, you'll get their website. I think it's like R242 or something like that. They're going into that aspect that is not as well known, that not only was every able-bodied man over 18 supposed to bear arms, but that the well-regulated militia was all those people put together being the militia under the authority of the sheriff in the state. And they were mainly worried about the federal government had become too encroaching. But that's all in Dr. Edwin Vieira's books, one of which is called Constitutional Homeland Security.
Wow, so there's 5 points for getting it correct, and another 5 points in bonus and background points. So you're doing pretty good so far.
Those are easy questions, though.
The what?
I said those were easy questions, but go ahead.
Okay. True or false? The right to the writ of habeas corpus is not found in the Bill of Rights.
False.
That was incorrect. It's actually in Article 1, Section 9.
Now, you said it was not found in the Bill of Rights. Oh, you're saying it's found in the Constitution.
All right, let me ask it again, all right? The right to the writ of habeas corpus is not found in the Bill of Rights. True or false?
It is not found in the Bill of Rights. I thought it was in the Bill of Rights, so that's why I said false, but you're saying it is not in the Bill of Rights.
It's kind of a tricky question. It's true or false, but it was in Article 1, Section 9, and I say that as an example of how difficult these questions can be. Some of them can be real easy, some can be really challenging. But yeah,
maybe we should ask our dear leader, since he's a constitutional scholar.
You mean Obama?
No, sorry. I get him confused with that guy who also gets 100% of the vote. A fellow from North Korea. Yeah, I think he's shorter, though.
Okay. Here's another one. I think you'll get this one, Jim. All right.
That was a good question, though. That was a good one, and I should have known it, but I'm now glad to be clarified on it. Go ahead.
Okay. Here's another question, a little easier. A judicial warrant is required to bring forth a search or seizure in your home. Is that found in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, or 6th Amendment?
4th. That's found in the 4th Amendment, as Rand Paul has been driving home for us at the national level, thankfully.
Yeah, that's correct. There's another 5 points. So you got 10, 20, 5. You missed one. That's a minus 5. So you're 20 points out of 4 questions. That's pretty good. Now, if it's the 20-point quiz with similar questions, you'd probably actually get over 100 because of the bonus points.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure because I really need to reread the Bill of Rights and the Constitution because I haven't done it for many years, so I'm not totally sure I'd come out as good as you think, and I better do that quick before I'm on a hostile program that starts asking these questions.
Well, I'm just really glad, and when you're done, I got to tell about a local constitutional challenge that happened this weekend, filmed by FFN. Closing statements.
Tell about it now because I'm just going to I'm going to go on mute and quietly hang up in 3 or 4 minutes when I get there. But listen, Kelly, this is a great idea, this constitutional challenge, because people are so busy. We all don't. Probably 99% of us, especially me, don't know about as much about the Bill of Rights and Constitution precisely as we think we do. So it's a great idea, and good night to everybody, and I'll go on mute and listen until I have to hang up, okay?
Thank you very much for coming on to the show, and good luck to you.
You too. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Talk soon.
Yeah, well, Jim, I've been working in a couple of years now between Watch the Boat and Guardians for Liberty. I've never seen any inkling whatsoever of anti-Semitism. He's, my last name there is Mordecai. It's very Jewish. And I also come from a long line of Jewish hog farmers. So, anyway.
Oh. I'm sorry. Everything that's posted online about Sharia law, I try and keep it civil. because I'm not an anti-person and I don't believe in personal attacks, except for the ultimate leaders of whoever's behind bad things. So I see all these things about bacon and pork, and that just really, wow.
I'm going to join the bacon party. Yeah. Yeah, when I was so disgusted with the Republican Party, I considered joining the bacon party because I love bacon, and I can't imagine anyone not loving bacon, so I thought that might have been the way to go.
Now, of course, Robert, you're talking about the actor Kevin Bacon.
Oh, no, I meant bacon. The symbol was a pig. So, no, it was the bacon party, like, you know, the crunchy, yummy meat candy type, yeah.
I'm not sure if you can get them in Ohio, but I think one of the fast food chains actually has a bacon milkshake.
Ooh, well, I don't know if I'd go that far. But you know what's good is I like rainbow we're getting off topic, but what the heck, Bard's Logic After Dark. But
yeah,
I
we're
like
talking
rainbow
about liquid
sherbet
infidels
chocolate
now.
Shake. Rainbow sherbet chocolate shake. So when you get a shake, you go to United Dairy Farmers or whatever you guys have out there, and you put rainbow sherbet in it, and then you put in the chocolate milk, and then you mix it up, and it's a rainbow sherbet chocolate shake. Oh,
but where's the bacon?
Well, there's no bacon, but you know.
Oh,
I don't know if I have
a bacon.
I don't know if I have a
bacon
shake, though. Huh?
No bacon.
Well, I might have some bacon on the side, you know. But.
All right, okay.
Well, we'll throw bacon into the sherbet, and you call us the liquid infidel.
I think that one's called a liquid heart attack.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you about some breaking news here by FFN. It happened this weekend. There was a constitutional challenge here at our local town hall meeting. It was filmed by FFN, which is called Fictional Future News. And anyway, the candidates were interviewed after they came out of the constitutional challenge, and the establishment Republican, he only got a 20 out of 100. He put his hand in the camera and walked off. Zelensky, the Democrat candidate, she just wouldn't answer the questions, walked off. And there was a Republican did pretty good. He got 70 out of 100. And then there was Jose. He was a candidate for citizenship.
Did you do that, Kelly?
You what? Jose.
I didn't actually ask you to go ahead and do that.
I'll bet you anything that Jose was a legal immigrant who jumped through all the hoops to come here and actually cares about what America stands for.
Well, when he was interviewed by the cameras after the constitutional challenge, he did really well. Jose, how'd you do so well? I immigrant in your country. I have a green card. To become citizen of your country, I must pass test on Constitution. But a congressman, he no passy test. And so they went on a little further, and he says, I know understand something about your country. Congressman, he picked the laws. He no passy test. I picked the fruit. I passy test. Maybe we should have job change where I picked the laws and he picked the fruit.
You know, that was a great joke, but I have to tell you, Kelly, that was the most horrible, horrible accent I've ever heard.
Well, I'm sorry to say something quick, Roger. Yeah, so that's Fictional Future News. We filmed it, and I was hoping to have it for tonight, but we got to do some more editing. But, it'll be a YouTube video out next week.
Yeah, get somebody to dub the voice for you.
We'll play
I got this guy.
Here,
he does it so well. I picked the laws, he picked the fruit. We were
you know
all
what?
Laughing
I'll tell
so
you
hard.
Something.
It was ridiculous.
But
real quick, I stepped away for a little bit because we did bring Cindy back on because the line got dropped. So I wanted to bring her in, and so she had another comment. We only have about less than 20 minutes, because I'm going to try to end things a little bit earlier than I normally do because it seems like we get cut off at the end, and I'm going to try to work towards alleviating that so people aren't cut off, including myself at mid-sentence.
That happened last Friday.
Yeah, and so I want to be able to do that. So I want to bring Cindy in. She has a comment, and then we'll bring it back to you, Dan. Go ahead. And then I do want to bring Carice back in as well if we have some time. So as I said, we got about 15 minutes left before I got to start closing things out. Go ahead, Cindy.
Hey, I had a little warning here. I don't know if you guys know who Lindsay Williams is. He is the guy who says that he was the chaplain to the elite for many years. He was around, supposedly, when, and he knows so much, I guess you have to believe him. But anyway, he's been around all these years, all these elite guys in the CFR and the Trilateral and the Bilderbergers and all that. He's friends with those guys. And now he goes around doing, you know, videos and things, trying to educate people on what they're trying to do. His latest one is called the Global Currency Reset. the Russians and, I mean, there's like hundreds. Well, let me read you what one quote from the DVD. The greatest event in the financial world in the past 1,000 years is about to take place. 204 nations have agreed with the IMF to reset their currency. Christine Lagarde is the new financial head of the IMF. If she and the elite have their way, this event will take place within the next 90 days. I've heard April, but he says in the next 3 months. The elite have prepared you for this event with an electric smart meter, which has been installed on almost every house in America. There's one at my house. Only from my elite friend will you ever know and done to you. Only in my new DVD will you learn these details. No one else will dare to tell you this. Time is no longer on your side. It's time to take action and protect yourself today. Now, he has many times advocated getting gold and abandoning your IRAs and your other you know, retirement plans that are into stocks and cash and bonds and things like that. You need to have something that increases with value when the dollar dies, you know, not decreases. But anyway, this global reset is, I think it is. If you Google global reset or global currency reset, there's dozens of articles. Everybody is talking about this, and everybody is talking about what's going to happen to the American dollar when this happens, and how it will no longer be the chief among nations, and that this is going to completely pad the pockets of all the elites, and it will take away the buying power of all the middle class. In other words, we will be decimated, as in the days of the early communist takeovers of Russia, China, Vietnam, Korea,
Let me address
Korea,
Lindsay Williams a little bit. Lindsay Williams, for some reason he had a call to go to Alaska when there were pipelines being built, and he hobnobbed with a lot of people. He was able to, you know, being a man of peace or a peacemaker, he was able to help a lot of infighting in corporations, and I've seen that. And even if they're all powers that be or they're all conservative, it doesn't matter. There's infighting on how to do projects and this and that, whatever, and personality difference, blah, blah, blah. He was able to bring people to peace and move forward, you know, as corporate decisions and construction and yada, yada, and construction crews are kind of hard to work with. And so he just elevated quickly in respect by the powers that be. He befriended several of them, and he started to get, you know, he stayed friends with these people after the pipeline project, and they were calling him because their eternity was about to approach because some of them were dying, and he got a number of deathbed confessions by these high power that be people, and that's where he's coming mm-hmm. from.
Yeah.
Now, I
you really
would like
need
to address
get on
two things. First of all, just very briefly, when we were talking about the fellow who picks the fruit, I work with a number of American citizens who came from various other countries, including Mexico, and they're about the staunchest patriots that you will ever meet, who do know their Constitution, who didn't just come here to a better chance economically, but who came here because the countries they came from are tyrannies, where there is no opportunity to do as you wish, and they are so strict with their children and so caring about the education that the children receive, and they insist on working as hard as possible. These are the people we were when we came here. Now, as far as I'm not sure if I can say the acronym, the blank hitting the fan, whether it's this monetary collapse that seems like it may be imminent, everything that Cindy's saying is correct. America is no longer the reserve currency or petrodollar currency. They can buy and sell in gold and in other currencies, including the Iraqi dinar and the Indian rupee and the Chinese yuan. If anybody is interested, it's not crazy talk to think about being prepared. We used to laugh at people who said that the government was spying on everybody, and we'd hand them a square of tinfoil and say, here, make a hat. And now everybody knows, because it's vetted, proven fact with congressional testimony and unimpeachable news reports from Snowden and Manning, that they are spying on us. So if you want to be prepared, think about this winter, or depending on where you live, think about the last earthquake or hurricane that you had to go through, or the tornadoes that came through your area. I don't recommend gold. If you show gold, people think you have gold. It's not a safe place. But junk silver is something you can buy. That's small denomination mercury dimes and Washington quarters that have no monetary value, no numismatic value. They're not collector pieces. They're just simply silver value, and they're worn. But if you want to trade something small, they have that wonderful ring when you drop them on a tabletop and you can tell they're real. Bartering and the gray economy, and this is not a plug for my name, it's not a black market, but the gray economy is what's keeping this country afloat right now. There are so many people who are doing business with their neighbors on a handshake, on a trade. I will give you this if you will do this work for me, and vice versa. There are a number of things that are worthwhile to have, and you don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to have a lot of money. And I wouldn't recommend letting everybody know you're doing it. Buy it for cash. Go to discount stores nearby. Primarily ammunition at 22 is ubiquitous. You can still get it because it's easy to trade, but don't trade it with anybody unless you know that they're not going to shoot you. Food. Canned food. You don't need to spend a lot of money on this really fancy MRE stuff or, you know, the stuff that's all prepared. Canned food's already cooked. You can open it, you can eat it, and you can trade it. And what's more, if nothing bad happens, nothing at all, which is what I'm working for, peaceful revolution, restore the Constitution without violence, then when it approaches its expiration date, I'm absolutely certain that there's a food pantry near you or a church that gives out food, and you can donate it, and they're happy to feed poor people who need food. Tools are extremely useful. Most people don't have anything more than a very basic set of tools. If you have tools of fairly decent quality, and you can have a lot of them, those are things people will always need. And the hardest thing to come by in any sort of crisis, if you've been through any sort of natural disaster, and the most difficult to store is fuel. Now, here in this area, for heat anyway, we've got coal, and coal keeps indefinitely and doesn't require anything special except to keep it out of the sun, because then it off-gasses and it loses its potency. But if you have the means to store some liquid fuel, even if it's just for yourself so you can get someplace if you need to. And we're not talking about bugging out because the tanks and the black helicopters are coming, which, God forbid, they just might. You still might need to get from your area where there's no power and it's freezing cold. You might need to get from an area that's about to flood to high ground. You might need to get somewhere else to a trusted family member or a friend. And you'll need fuel to do that. And one of the first things that will happen is that fuel and food will become scarce. We no longer have regional warehouses, which, you know, if you read the Bible in Exodus, Joseph interpreted the Pharaoh's dream of 7 fat cows and 7 lean cows and told the Pharaoh to start stocking up on grain. And he did, and there came a famine, and he was able to keep the people fed. We don't have that. We have supply chain now. Everything is computerized, and it's on time, real time, on demand. So when the SKUs get scanned, they automatically order it. Small amounts come in by truck, and they have just enough on time to sell the next day or possibly the next week. Think, folks, if you've been through a snowstorm this winter, and that's pretty much all of America, what happens if you don't get to the grocery store in the first couple of hours after people realize that it's a snowstorm? There's no bread, there's no milk, and lots of other things on the shelf are empty. And that's not conspiracy, that's economics. So being prepared is never a bad thing. Having tools, and the two most important things that you can have are not commodities, because you might have to move quickly. Commodities can be lost, they can be stolen, they can be destroyed. What you need is the mindset of whatever happens, I'm going to do the smart thing, the honorable thing, and I'm going to do it quickly. So that means preparing. If there's going to be a fire in your house, you don't know. But having an escape plan is always a good idea. Having a meetup plan is always a good idea. These are not crazy talk ideas. These are not conspiracy ideas. These are just simply common sense. The other thing is skills. Do you know how to make a fire? That's pretty basic. Do you know all the things that you can do with a knife or with a hammer? And I'm not talking about violence and combat. I'm talking about building things, fixing things. Can you do basic repairs on your car? Do you even know how to do an oil change? If you don't know how to do these things, we're lucky. You don't even have to enroll in a class. Everything's available on YouTube. It's all there. There are people who will show you how to do these things, how to recharge a battery using pickling salts, how to do anything. And it's worth knowing these things. If nothing bad ever happens, it's a useful skill.
And that's we've got just a few minutes left before I got to start closing things out. So I do want to bring it over to you, Carice, and then we'll have to start getting ready to close things out. Go ahead.
Well, just a little bit talking about like the what was her name, Cindy, I believe. She was talking about the economic collapse. Okay, and the economic collapse and you know the elites and things like that. There's still, you know, very interesting things about, you know, that conversation about the elites and the top and things like that and et cetera, especially when you consider the talk about the current RFID chip technology and the various things that could do with RFID chips. To bring up a quick point about the type of the elite influence that is definitely in our world outside of our just our economic realm and our petrodollar, because you know, I mean, people talk about, oh, you know, our dollar, it's fiat, which it is, but in its own way, like I tell people, when you think of the bigger scale of things, our dollar really is run by petrol. That's why we're in so many wars, in my opinion, is because we're definitely trying to dominate that side of the ball, and that's why you have countries like Russia and China trying to gang up, especially considering that China themselves are having an economic collapse. And see, that's why a lot of what Cindy was saying makes perfect sense, because China's economy itself is experiencing the same type of problems that we are. The only thing with China is they have a socio-capitalistic influence within their economy. And so they still have the government influencing the private sector, but in their own little, you know, essences, they try to have the private sector try to be quote unquote independent when it's not. Going back to that, we just had a man recently, as of last year, get his job back because the EEOC took a lawsuit saying that he was working for a mining company and they wanted him to have an RFID chip to be able to get in and clock in. And so the man refused because of his Christian beliefs and said that, you know, I will not do that because of my concerns about the mark of the beast and et cetera, et cetera. Well, they fired that man. And then the EEOC had to come in and sue that company for that man to get his job back. So, I mean, we see the slow, steady trends of elite influence in our lives. And that's why it is important that us as Americans become involved in our government and become involved in what these senators and these congressmen and these representatives are doing, because if we don't, we will lose our country to the interests of, like I said, love to say earlier, privateers. And so I just had to talk about that just a little bit, because that RFID chip and the drones and our privacy, I mean, the fact that Obama killed two American citizens, the fact that Bush tortured an American, the fact that we have the NDAA that makes it legal to kidnap American citizens, I mean, these are issues that people should really, to me, more worry about more than anything, because, yeah, we can prepare for disaster. We can. But right now, the impending tyrannical ideals of our federal government, to me, is the more taxing. I'm not saying the end is coming tomorrow, and I'm not saying it's coming next week or 90 days from now. I'm just saying that if we allow our government to progress, it's going to be inevitability.
As Dan mentioned earlier, and then we're going to go ahead and start closing some things out, is that, you know, and it may not even be with our generation that this thing,
true,
you know, may happen. It may or may not. But what you mentioned earlier, Dan, you know, we're trying to save, you know, things, you know, here in the United States, and hopefully that spreads, you know, throughout the world, because we are the last best hope, in my opinion, you know, for the world, is that it's for the children and our grandchildren, and we owe them that just for the very fact that, you know, they are our prosperity, that, you know. And so, you know, it's even if it happens then, I mean, it's our responsibility as this generation to protect the next, to do whatever we can, and peacefully, of course, hopefully, to do it that way, you know, to make sure that, you know, we maintain, or we can't even maintain, we got to get back to what the founding fathers intended. And I see we only get about 9 minutes left, so what I want to do is just give each person about a minute to do some closing thoughts, and we'll give deference to the lady here first, and that would be you, Cindy, and then we'll go to you, Carice, and then Kelly, and then Dan, and then that will probably bring it to the time where I need to shut things down. So go ahead, Cindy. We've got about a minute in each person. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm going to use my minute to read you a quote. I'll tell you who said it at the end. Quote, "Banking was conceived in iniquity and was born in sin. The bankers own the earth. Take it away from them, but leave them with the power to create deposits, and with a flick of the pen, they will create enough deposits to buy it back again. However, take it away from them, and all the fortunes like mine will disappear, and they ought to disappear, for this world would be a happier and better world to live in. But if you wish to remain slaves of the bankers and pay for the cost of your own slavery, then let them continue to create deposits." End quote. That was Sir Joseph Sir Josiah Stamp, president of the Bank of England in the 1920s, second richest man in England at the time.
Interesting. And speaking of England, I was looking, and Dan, I'd like you to show me more about this Alexa.com website. And speaking of that, it looks like that 2.3% of those visiting the show here on Blog Talk Radio are from the United Kingdom. So that's kind of interesting. Hopefully, I could get some people to visit the page from Ireland. That'd be great. So anyway, thank you very much, Cindy. We'll go ahead. Bring it back to you, Creed, for some parting comments. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I just wanted to leave off my last minute with saying this. Carter G. Woodson, he influenced me a lot. If you guys don't know who Carter G. Woodson is, he is known as the father of Black History Month, and he founded the NAACP and et cetera. He talked about the Constitution in his book, The Miseducation of the Negro, which is a short book, not a long book. And in this book, he says this. He says, there was once upon a time where there was a legislative measure pretty much where they wanted to have the Constitution printed in the school histories and taught in all school histories. And so when this legislation was brought to the forefront, someone said that it would not be a good idea to have this legislation taught because the Constitution would teach the Negro the rights they are guaranteed, and that is not in the interest of the country. Even back then, they knew that the powers of the Constitution granted to us Americans was steeped in natural law. And they knew even back then that when the Negro was still striving for his freedom, that if he understood the powers enumerated to him in the Constitution, that he would be free because natural law deemed it so.
And you know what? That's the reason that all – I have to say this because I did a year's worth of research on this. That is the reason why all the extremely rich people who were funding black education in the post-war era, they increased their reputation as a good guy to the black people by saying we're going to educate black people. So they put all these millions of dollars into educating black people. But they also at the same time told everybody, every school that they supported, that if they gave the black person a traditional education, they would withhold their money. They were expected to give black people the education, only the education to learn a trade, and basically that trade was farming or washing clothes. But anyway, that was
enough
all
to make
they were allowed to do with their money.
Enough to make their money. Go ahead, because I don't want us to run out of time. So sorry, but go ahead, Kelly.
Well, if you study George Washington Carver, who came from my alma mater, Iowa State, he did phenomenal things. The black men did awesome things for the human race. Let's see, we talked about silver. It was at 48 a couple of years ago. It was at 19 recently. It's gone up to 21. It is going to skyrocket. Jim Connett Jr., awesome guy. GuardiansForLiberty.com. They got 7 principles that you will not see anywhere that I've seen anywhere on the web that's so concise and clear. So that's just a plug for GuardiansForLiberty.com. And you can download the Constitutional Challenge there too. So I guess that's it. I really enjoy this as always.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Appreciate it. Then go ahead, Dan.
Well, I wanted to make a couple of points. First of all, I am gratified that we're blessed that we're coming together. It's not unusual. I would have been blown away by the fact that Kelly happens to be working on the same website with Mr. Condit, or that Mr. Condit knows somebody who I know personally, even though he's in Ohio and I've never met him. This is happening more and more. This synchronicity shows that we are working for a greater purpose. I want to address race, because this is a major topic that wasn't a major topic just 5.5 years ago. I grew up in Philadelphia and Atlantic City, but mostly Philly, in Bill Cosby's neighborhood. In my generation, I'm 52, we were the first generation that grew up mixed. We had a gang. They were a mixed gang. It was black and white and yellow. My first best friend that died before the ones with the car accidents and the motorcycle accidents and now to, you know, diseases of age, heart attacks and things, he died of sickle cell. And I'm reminded of great men like Frederick Douglass, who never said that anyone should have a handout, but an equal opportunity to learn and do the best they can and to fail if necessary. And I look at people like Dr. Carson today. Ben Carson did not get a handout. He did not get affirmative action. You don't get to be the preeminent pediatric neurosurgeon saving children's lives who have brain cancer unless you're the very best at what you do. When you think about things that the so-called civil rights leaders like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are talking about, it shames me as a guy who grew up speaking Ebonics in Philly to have them say these things about the Second Amendment, which protects all of our rights, when the NRA was founded to help protect people who were newly freed from the horrors of slavery. And I'd like to remind everyone that Charlton Heston, before he joined the NRA and eventually became his president, marched with civil rights leaders, and that the NRA stopped church bombings. Well, it's not quite true. The church bombings that were occurring in the South during the early 60s and the civil rights, beginning of the civil rights era, when it was getting very, very dangerous, they were bombing churches. They were murdering little girls simply because of the color of their skin, blown up until the NRA said, we're going to offer you weapons the same way we offered England weapons during World War II because they didn't have any. We're going to offer you training, and we're going to come down there and stand by you. And these KKK thugs came by to blow somebody up and started shooting,
and
they got shot back at.
And I hate to end it there,
I've
just got about a minute, if that, to close things out. So I want to thank everyone, of course, for coming on. Keep posted to see if we end up doing a show here on Friday. I'll let folks know. I'll send out messages and things on Facebook, things of that nature. But we look forward to seeing everyone again. If not Friday, then next Wednesday. And then we'll go from there. So thank you, everyone, again. Have a good night. Take care. And we'll end tonight the way I do every night, and that is with a song here from Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com. So take care and have a good night.